It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great show ahead for you. We're going to talk about DEF CON. It's coming up this weekend. Roberto Baldwin is on his way. He's from Engadget. Greg Farrow is just back from the IETF meetings. We'll talk about the internet engineering ahead and what's ahead for TLS 1.3. Mike Elgin's also here, our digital nomad. Lots to talk about, including artificial reality, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, and Audis with Facebook on the screen. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 624, recorded Sunday, July 23rd, 2017. There's a real argy-bargy going on. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. And by Audible. Sign up for the Gold Plus One plan to get two free books and a 30-day free trial at audible.com/twit2. And by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. For one low, transparent fee, Betterment gives you personalized advice and invests your money. For a limited time, you can get up to 1 year managed free. Learn more at betterment.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with the best tech journalists in the biz. We got a great panel for you today because we're coming off of Black Hat and going into DEF CON, and Roberto Baldwin is here. He's actually literally going into DEF CON.
He's got the Queen Wave.
From Engadget. Very nicely done.
I haven't set up my burners yet, though.
You don't want to bring real phones, real equipment.
No, I don't.
Not to DEF CON.
Well, not to the floor. I bring it to Vegas, and then at night, I take it out of its Faraday bag, and then I...
That's smart.
Yep.
That's Mike Elgin to your left. Nice to see you. Mike back from his digital nomadicness.
Yes, we were in Italy, Spain, Morocco, and France.
Oh,
it was
so jealous.
Wonderful. 3 months or so in change.
And you're back visiting the family, but are you going to go back on the road?
Yes.
You're going to be going to Barcelona next month.
That's right.
Month.
We're going to go to Barcelona, and then we're probably going to go to Italy and France again. This time we're going to have my son and his wife with us.
Oh.
And granddaughter.
Yeah.
And it should be pretty awesome.
Princess Squishy Face.
Princess Squishy Face.
In Morocco.
Yeah, we're not going to bring her to Morocco. We're gonna introduce her to a nicer place, which is Provence, which she will love because she loves French things.
Yeah,
like
and
all
she's
the French
old?
Things. She's 8 months old. But like all the French things, my wife brought her little tiny dresses and stuff like that.
Becoming nomad.
Ooh. It's gastronomad.net.
Oh. All right.
Was, yeah,
we got to get. Can we put that on the lower third? Because I want to give a plug to Mike and Amiris. Business because
thank you, for that.
You can go. There's, I think, last time I saw room for one more couple in Barcelona.
That's right. And we have assembled the most incredible team of experts. The best bread baker in Spain is going to give us a personal tour and class. We're going to learn how to make
so
sangria
bad.
and paella.
We're going to be so close. We're going to be in Monte Carlo at that time.
We went to Monte Carlo for the first time, like. Three,
I know,
ago.
And we were looking at your pictures with great interest.
It's a surreal
place. Yeah, it looked
place.
Really cool.
Yeah.
It's the Vegas of the Riviera?
It's almost like Inception. It's so mountainous and steep and vertical. It's amazing.
Can't wait. Yeah. Hey, look who's here from the UK, Greg Farrow and the Packet Pushers Network. Good to
hey,
have you.
Hey, how's it going?
Nice to see you, Greg.
Yep, sorry, I can't be there in person, but I just flew back from Prague on the weekend, so I was available for this.
I'm thrilled. You mean you came back just for the show?
Yeah, pretty much. I was the IETF was happening in Prague. You know, the people who actually make the standards that drive the internet. And I had a hanging around there with the people who, you know, these are the nerdy nerds, if you can imagine that.
What
the
is, yeah, people. Really, what is that like, the IETF meetings? That must be.
well, I mean, for normal people, they would walk in there and go like, there is no fashion crime not being committed. Let's just start with that.
Oh, yeah. Sandals with socks, that's nothing. This goes way beyond that. Yeah.
This goes way beyond that. You know, like a 20-year-old suit coat with a 35-year-old T-shirt underneath that's just got some arcane, you know, like there was one guy who was wearing bright fluorescent orange trousers, big baggy ones, and a bright yellow shirt.
Nice.
And he was generously proportioned in every way. And it was kind of like a flag walking past.
How do you get in this group? I mean, who are these people?
Most of them started out, like the older people have been there sort of 30 or 40 years building the standards since the 1960s and the 1970s.
Are they sysadmins? Are they university types?
They've all gone through various incarnations. Anybody can participate. The ITF is a volunteer effort. So anybody who wants to can jump in and start participating in the standards process. You join the mailing lists. You build up your karma points by contributing stuff to people and telling them about stuff. And then as you build up more points, you can participate in more and more stuff. So right now, a lot of the people who participate are employees of Huawei, Google, some of them from Comcast and so forth. Cisco has a number of people.
That's depressing with these big companies, but that makes sense.
Well, these people are often very unaligned. Like they may be working for the companies, but their best intentions are by and large in the interests of the world or the community as the whole. And these people really work hard to do things like encryption in the internet. We'll talk more about that later on, but they're the people that are responsible for the new TLS 1.3 standard and trying to prevent companies like Google from sniffing your traffic as it flies as it's in motion. And they're making standards to be able to improve data centers. They're making standards to improve WAN connectivity or 5G or metropolitan MANs and, you know, it just so many different areas. It's not just networking now. They're also doing browsers and stuff like that. So it's been a real effort to try and bring this around. It's just fascinating to see it all because it's all volunteers getting in a room and basically hashing out the things that they can't sort out on the mailing list. So if you have something on a mailing list and you can't agree, then they'll take it to the conference and then you hash it out in person. So there's all these people just huddled around arguing over this arcane computer science. And it's just the most fun thing to be around. Just you can smell the nerd smoke coming off as you move around.
Well, and because you have a fairly deep understanding of this stuff, it's probably meaningful to you. A lot of people would just be nonsense what they're saying.
I'm nowhere near as smart as any of them, so please don't make that comparison.
Well, you're smarter than me, so that puts me even – I'll be like a lizard there. I feel like – I wonder if these – of course, there's no battles harder fought than battles over – the less important something is, the worse the battle is. How hard fought are these battles? Are they vicious, or do these guys – and I presume it's mostly guys – have a sense – of the importance of what they're doing and really how much this means to the world? That may be a more important meeting than the G20 summit.
I think it's very collegiate. So the first thing to do is it's very sort of collegiate.
Yeah,
it's very community. Battles may be hard fought, but that's unusual. And often battles aren't fought on company lines. They're fought on technology lines, like I believe my technology is the best way forward, and people go around and try to convince other people that my vision of technology is the right way. The people who have been doing it for the longest, who have the most karma, will tend to be listened to more. So as a rule, there's sort of a stabilization between people just entering into the process and those people who've been participating and contributing for 20, 30, 40 years. I conducted a YouTube interview with Susan Hares. She's the chair of the routing working group, which is the one that does all of the routing for the internet backbone, you know, the BGP and autonomous systems and that sort of stuff, among other things. And she was telling me how back in the 1970s and 60s, what it was like when we started doing these technologies for the first time and telling stories about how we built these routers or why we did this, because she was there writing that code.
That's neat.
Just fascinating to talk to. Yeah.
Are there how many women are there?
One.
It's pretty well attended. There might be 5, maybe 10%.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, I mean, it should be 50, obviously, but that's better than nothing.
It's very difficult to go to these conferences. The ITF meets in person 3 times a year. Usually meet somewhere in the Americas and then in Europe and then in Asia somewhere. although they've stopped going to the U.S. because of the
isn't that
the change
interesting?
In, wow. Yeah, the visa policy it meant that a lot of people couldn't attend these meetings, so they've shifted all of the meetings from the U.S. to Canada, which is disappointing. I feel sorry for everybody in the U.S. Like, the idea behind the ITF was to make it as participatory as possible and as much as anybody can get in, and to sort of move it outside the U.S. cuts you off from a market. So, and I know they were very sad about that, but, you know, it's not fair to people coming in from Africa or the Middle East to not be able to attend.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we'll get more about some of the goings on there, but I'm glad you're here, Greg. And how about
Thanks.
You at DEF CON? Are you looking forward, Roberto, to anything particular? Or
I like DEF CON a lot. I like
it's fun, just, isn't it?
It is. It's yeah. really fun. It sort of puts you, you know, it keeps you on your toes the entire time because you can't go in with your sort of regular digital life.
Right.
What happens is you go in with your regular digital life, and then within 20 minutes
you're on
hacked.
The wall of sheep.
And, yeah, you're on the wall of sheep, or just someone hacks you, and it's a great way to sort of show you the potential of the future of like how much we have to take, you know, protect our privacy, protect our security. I mean, everything that's happening there, there's a potential for it to be what the real world will be like if companies, if, you know, if people don't get their, you know, get it together.
Right.
And so,
which they won't.
Which they won't.
We know
it's
they won't.
Well, individuals getting it together is that's, you can only say, hey, use different passwords every time, use two-factor authentication every time. And, you know, you can just keep telling people that doesn't mean they're going to do it.
Right. Don't well, worry, the government will take care of our privacy.
Yeah, and so when, and then that's the other thing. So it kind of behooves the you know, the companies that these security, these researchers and hackers are talking about, and, you know, these systems that they're talking about and saying, hey, you know, we found this issue, fix it.
Right.
And that's really what DEF CON is about. Right. We found something wrong, fix it.
Right. We're going to shame you into fixing it.
Now, before DEF CON is Black Hat, and that
Black
was
Hat.
This weekend.
That's,
what is the difference between the two?
Black Hat is more of a sort of corporate event. You have, instead of getting individual talks, you get usually end up getting talks from security companies. And they kind of talk about what they're thinking. There's a lot of networking.
Right.
You know, everyone dresses like this with a tie at Black Hat. And then they go back to their room and they put their T-shirt on and they like let their, you know, they comb out like the stuff in their hair that makes it one color. They let themselves be themselves at DEF CON. DEF CON is more, people call it hacker summer camp.
Where will we learn more about exploits? Do hackers bring their exploits to DEF CON to talk about, or do they do it more at Black Hat? Because I know we always brace ourselves this time of year.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
things
DEF CON
are going
to... I think we're going to learn more from DEF CON because the people who are presenting are presenting as individuals.
Right.
So there isn't the concern about, oh, well, the company behind me or this behind me, or I have to worry about, you know, what my boss thinks. And so you have that. I think that mentality actually breeds, you know, a better presentation.
Yeah.
And it's a bit more fun. It's a bit more loose. And,
right.
We're also seeing a transition, Leo, where we used to only see security vulnerabilities announced at the conferences, the hacker conferences, so that you could build up some, you know, hacker cred, you know, get some ego stroking going on. But increasingly, we're seeing bug bounties being paid.
There's so much money in this now. You don't hold on to it.
No, you want to put that out. And so a lot of some of the talks at Black Hat and at DEF CON are about things that have been disclosed
already.
Yeah. But they sort of talk about the journey, and they talk about how they found it out. And I think the journey is really the more interesting part. Like, how did you find out about this? How did you, you know, reverse engineer this malware? How did you figure out that, you know...
Is DEF CON going to suffer from the same kind of visa issues that the IETF...
There's
suffered from.
There
I mean,
have been a few
I would
people,
imagine there are a few hackers who say, "I'm not coming to the U.S."
Yeah, you know, I've asked them about that, and they don't have any sort of official. But they have, you know, there are people who have said on Twitter that we're not going to go to DEF CON this year because we're concerned about, you know, visas. We're concerned about the Border Patrol, like looking at our phones. We're, you know, concerned about, you know, there's a lot of things that
By the way, that seems to have been a little bit overblown. I think we were very worried about that. But, Mike, you've traveled into and out of the country.
Yeah.
I have also in the last few months. Right. It was a snap for me.
Yes. It's a largely theoretical. It's mostly targeted.
It could happen to you. It's happened to people.
Right. Yeah, it's happened to journalists.
It's probably worse if you're Muslim, you're brown, you're somebody who doesn't look like you and me, Mike. Right. But it does. And the Border Patrol says it's a very, very small percentage of people that we do this to. So it may be just the risk of that as opposed to the certainty.
That's a calm and reasoned approach. The other approach is to consider the fact that should there be a horrible incident of some kind, believe me,
everything
it's going
to
get locked down.
You wrote a good article on that.
We're one bomb away from a full-on laptop ban where the laptops will be banned from the cargo hold, not the... and the cabin.
We're going right now in the opposite direction. This week, the laptop ban was completely lifted. The last few airlines that were still... These are Middle... It was always weird to me that they were Middle Eastern airlines coming from the Middle East, not American-owned airlines coming from the Middle East, as if you're a bad guy, why would you say, well, no, I got to fly on Emirates. I can't fly United.
I can't fly United.
I only fly
Have you
Emirates.
Seen the video for United? I'm not flying on that.
I don't want to go. Those guys, they drag people off the planes. It's too dangerous. No, but seriously, a ban like that can only be effective if it's universal. Yeah. Otherwise, if you've got a laptop bomb, you just don't fly those five airlines.
Or you just drive or take a train or a boat to another country and get on a plane there.
It's probably based on one of two things. One of them is that they handed, Morocco or whatever, a list of things that they want them to do at the airport. And Morocco
said,
not really. Yeah. And they say, well, we're going to make you do it.
I understand.
The other one is...
And it was Amman, Jordan, Cairo, Istanbul, Jeddah and Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait City, Casablanca, Morocco, Doha, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Those airports.
Yeah.
So it's presumed, you can presume maybe there's security issues in those airports.
But the other thing is that it's very likely is that the leader in this space is Israel. Israel has better intel. They have stronger secure airport security. They've really excelled in this area. And they're probably pushing the U.S. to do certain things. And the U.S. is going, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
We don't know
what's happening behind the scenes.
I think we think because of Trump's leaking to the Russians in the Oval Office that it was, in fact, Israeli intelligence that drove the laptop ban in
and
the
a
first
huge
place.
Amount of the airline-based anti-terror sort of spy info comes from Israel because they're all over that. I mean,
they do a great job.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You come in and out of my son traveled from Cairo to Tel Aviv.
That's got to be.
Yeah, and he was in an interrogation room for 6 hours.
Really?
Yeah. No, what are you doing in Cairo?
It's interesting, though. They rely, I'm told, the Israeli security forces rely on that. They rely on personal interviews more than anything else. Yep. They feel like if they talk to you, they'll catch you.
Yes, right. And it's
very expensive manpower. Wise, but
yes, it is. Yes, expensive. It is. But they're apparently very good at it. So, you come into a major U.S. airport, come into LAX or something like that, and it's just this cattle being herded through this mass process.
Now, Bruce Schneier's always said it's security theater, not true security. And it's obvious because if, for instance, you're flying first class, which incidentally the 9/11 terrorists flew first class. You are often
might as well cash in all the miles.
You're often exempted from those searches. Every time I fly business or first, I get TSA pre, and I don't even have to take my shoes off, let alone take my laptop out. But that's so it's theater.
Yes,
And what they don't want to do is disadvantage wealthy people.
The people who are paying them the most, they do not want them to stop flying.
But that's
if
where the
I
terrorists
stop flying,
fly first
someone else
class
is gonna fly.
Because they're closer to the front of the plane. It was easier for them to hijack the plane.
There was a wonderful cartoon that I saw a couple of years ago where airport security says, this bottle of water may be a bomb. I'm going to put it in this trash can with all these other potential bombs.
Where all
the people are. Where the largest concentration of people are outside of a plane is at the TSA.
I'm all for security. I want us to be safe. I don't want anything bad to happen to anybody in flight, certainly not me or my family. But I also don't think that security theater is the right way to go. Right.
And we've come a long, long way. I mean, Leo, you and I are old enough to remember when you could just get on a plane with a pistol and go to Cuba.
Right. It happened all the time. People hijacked planes all the time.
Absolutely. Those are the days.
Those are the days.
It's so simple then.
There's two things I think I could add to this. One is when I first started traveling to Las Vegas 4 or 5 years ago, there used to be – I always been traveling Virgin Atlantic for quite some time. There used to be three flights a day in and out of Vegas most days of the week. Now there's one plane a day, and that plane is not full. So the impact of the of the visa changes and the increased border security, from my point of view, has definitely had an impact. I can only get one plane a day, but that plane is empty, which improves my life a little bit. The second thing is that keep in mind that the computer systems that customs are using, that and they're all interlinked, what they really do is a deep data search on you before you get on the plane based on when you bought the ticket, you know, how did you pay for it, you know, what address did you put on that, is it your home address? Your passport, of course, is the key of the data. So don't underestimate the ability of the computers that customs is using to identify potential people, because it's still certainly true that when I go to board the plane, there are people being picked out of the queue by name and then searched. Yeah. Not, you know, it's so there's definitely a different approach.
That actually happened to me coming back to the
really?
U.S. I was randomly selected. I had to walk literally like a half a mile to the other side of the airport and wait. And it was just an extensive frisking and bag search and all that kind of stuff.
They did that to me on the way back from Spain. And I only had to walk like from here to there.
Yeah.
It was like as everyone's getting on the plane, I'm the last person to get on the plane. They're like, oh, you go.
Has anybody in this panel or any of our visitors from overseas, have any of them had the thing we're all afeared of that they're going to say, give me your phone, unlock it, and I'll be back in half an hour? Has that happened to anybody coming into the U.S.? Or?
I have a phone that looks exactly like this phone. That is my international travel
phone. You have a dummy phone.
I have a dummy phone. It opened, all it has is Netflix and Amazon Prime so I can watch movies.
Like I said, I am all for security. I would prefer to see us do Israeli style security if it was effective than kind of an ineffectual theater.
Yeah.
Right? That's a waste of time for everybody if it doesn't make you safer.
But I'm super concerned about it because we live in a gadget centric world, we and everybody listening to this. And if they go after laptops and tablets, and if you can't travel with those, that's gonna just, I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
If you know, and so they're going to have processes to detect whatever it is they're afraid of into the future, because you know we have to be able to work on airplanes. I mean, imagine what
this is what you worried about is the minute something bad happens and a laptop actually does take a plane down, all of these bans will immediately go into effect, and nobody's going to get any work done
right
in the sky.
Yep.
But I'm not sure I'm against that. Idea, but I'll bring a book.
You pull your laptop out and they scan it. So is the issue with the scan not good enough?
Oh, you had to turn it on. Remember? Yeah. I mean, if it's a bomb, you're not going to be able to get a screen.
Well, see, this is the problem. Yeah, you can get with miniaturization.
No, I just mean if you put a bomb in this MacBook Air, it's unlikely that it would also boot.
Okay, it would boot.
But this MacBook Air might just be powered by an iPhone inside, and the rest of it is, C4.
Right. I'm obviously, I shouldn't be arguing this one.
You should see some of the DEF CON badges I'm looking at right now.
Oh, yeah. What is the badge? Did you get your badge yet?
You don't get your badge until you get to the official badge. You don't get it until you get to DEF CON.
And that's
always
a puzzle, right? There's always something
going
on.
Yeah, there's supposed to be something. This year, it sounds like they're not going to be. But the badge community is insane. So I'm actually working on an article talking about the badge community and talking to badge makers.
Oh,
and they're sending me stuff. And I've gotten two badges already. And one of it's got a screen on it. And it looks like Bender, and it's just amazing. Like and most of the badge is because of the design. Like they can make it. I mean, the badge could be this big with just a screen on it, but it's like these very nice designs that you wear. And I'm a nerd.
Yeah,
which is definitely
they're very cool. We talked to the guy who's on that committee for badges. I can't remember
awesome.
On triangulation, but it was a lot of fun. Longtime hacker, one of the greats. All right. Anyway, that's all kind of futures.
Yep.
There's. I could talk about the past. Did you know that Amazon was started 22 years ago this week?
I do now.
Yes, you do. 1995. And what a long way we've come.
And 22 years from now, they'll be the only company.
Yeah. I was playing with the Amazon shopping app. We've been showing this all week because I didn't know this, but they've hidden all these additional tools in the Amazon shopping app. Did you know that? If you go into Amazon and you go into the hamburger menu on the left, there's something new called programs and features. Oh, maybe they've taken it away from me. Maybe it's on Android only. But there it is, programs and features. And there's a treasure truck. Do you know about the treasure truck? Comes to your town. It has only one item on it. You sign up for the treasure truck?
They could use a smaller truck. There's just one item.
Yeah, it seems. Do you it's have like boxes I get sometimes when I order like a dongle and it comes in a box like this?
They do that with marketing.
That's the treasure box. Exactly. Yes. Amazon Spark, which is the strangest social network ever. Well, it's basically Instagram for shopping.
Speaking of talking about the past, when if you recall, when Google Plus first launched in 2011 or whatever it was, they had a news service called Sparks, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember
And so
that.
For them to take that name, since obviously nobody's using it.
Well, and the way they bury it and the stuff on it, I wonder if anybody even, why would you spend any time there? Right. I did the outfit. You have the new outfit compare. We should do this. We should do this. Unfortunately, you need to have two outfits. Did you bring two outfits?
No.
I tried to do this. You can't do it with different people. But I did it on Wednesday with a nice outfit and a creepy outfit, and the creepy outfit won. So what it does is it rates your – you take a picture of yourself with two different outfits, and it says, you should wear that today.
Yeah.
That's built in. This is going to be part of the new Amazon look when it comes out. That's the camera echo.
The machine learning needs more data.
They need a little more data.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going on. Right. This has nothing to do with my look.
How perfect would that have been to go to Greg's conference? There's in his meeting. Yeah, see, that's what
orange pants and a yellow shirt. How about a yellow shirt and orange pants?
Not just orange, but fluorescent. it wasn't enough to just wear like, you know, open-toed sandals. It had to be like, it was fantastic. No fashion crime uncommitted.
I had a really interesting revelation the other day. I went to Santana Row in San Jose and was walking around, and it was, you know, late-ish at night. And I told my wife, I was like, remember there was a Barnes & Noble there? There was a big, beautiful Barnes & Noble. Walked another block, and there was an Amazon store opening.
Yeah.
And
they paved Paradise, and they put up a bookstore.
Yeah, they ran the bookstores out of business so that they could
open bookstores. Here's the this is on Business Insider, the original Amazon 1995 web page. Remember when all web pages? Remember when all web pages were gray?
Oh yeah, those
we didn't
good times.
Have white. I guess I don't know why. And
it's easy on the eyes. I'm sure someone's like, you know what's easier on the eyes? Gray.
Look at that. It says, if you explore just one thing, make it our personal notification service. We think it's very cool. 1 million titles, consistently low prices.
Remember when 1 million titles was like, wow, that's way more
that's
than the
everything.
It's everything in the world.
Everything is
every
here.
Every book ever printed.
They did call themselves.
Except for the book you were looking for. That's how it worked. Exactly. They were like, ugh.
The Earth's biggest bookstores. Here is
did
the
you see that Amazon was getting up in antitrust. They're now saying that the government is starting to look very closely at what Amazon's doing as far as an antitrust, because if it gets much bigger,
I think they should.
Too big, yeah.
At the same time, I kind of have to admire Jeff and his ambition. He clearly,
everything just goes back into Amazon.
He's the most visionary. He's up there with Elon Musk. True visionary and a very, very disciplined visionary. Elon Musk is like, it's all a simulation. Blah, you know, still a visionary. Jeff Bezos doesn't go into flights of fancy. He is focused on running everybody else out of business and stealing their business.
Yeah.
And I say that like it's a bad thing. It's actually a mixed bag.
Well, it's kind of a bad thing.
No, but it's a mixed bag.
But we get some benefit from it. I mean, absolutely. This week I probably ordered 10, 15 things on Amazon. Yeah. I get boxes every single day from Amazon. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. It's basically my shopping now. Yeah. Is where I get
a lot of
everything.
My stuff. Yeah. I'll go and I'm like, no, I'm going to Amazon. I go to the store and I want a specific thing. I hate shopping, first of all. And I want a specific thing when I go to the store and they never have it.
Right.
And I'm just like, well, I guess Amazon's getting the money. And I get on my phone and I look it up. Ship.
I ordered some little thing. It was a, you know, $17 thing. And they said it'll arrive Sunday.
I know.
I ordered it Saturday.
I know.
I'm like, wait, I'm ordering it on Saturday and it's arriving on Sunday?
I don't understand
and
how it works.
And it arrived early. Yeah. I mean, it's like, wow.
And yet you do worry as they eat more and more of the world, as they buy Whole Foods, as they eat more and more of the world, that pretty soon there will be no other retailers. Right. Right now we choose to buy from Amazon. Right. In 2025, we probably won't have the choice. Maybe.
Well, keep in mind that shopping at Walmart's not exactly a pleasant experience.
Well, it isn't. There are people, though. You know, it's funny because we're nerds. We obviously, look at us. We obviously shop online. But I got these fine Dickies suspenders at Amazon.com. Yeah. But I think there are a lot of people. I talk to people all the time. I say, no, but I like to shop. I like to go to a store. I like to look at merchandise.
So here's one that kind of blew me away, because I always thought Amazon is mostly a U.S. market. We made a really good friend in Morocco. And she's just obsessed with reading and books. And I want to show you my book collection. She has this big book collection. Like, where are you getting these books? Because they're all in English. She's like, Amazon.com. I'm like, in Morocco? She's like, oh, yeah.
Wow. And they deliver. She probably has delivery, overnight delivery.
It's
and
unbelievable.
All it's amazing. Sears, which was the Amazon of its day.
Sears had the opportunity to be Amazon. When I was a kid, I remember we would go to my grandmother's house, and she would give us the Sears catalog. Boom. Yeah. The Christmas toy catalog. Boom. Get us. And we'd look through it, and oh, I want this. And then she would order it, and then it would show up. And yeah. Sears had the opportunity, and they blew it.
Sears has closed 200 Sears and Kmart stores this year alone. They have lost about $10 billion in the last few years. And now they've announced they're going to start selling Sears Kenmore appliances on
dun, dun, dun.
Amazon.
And those appliances will run the A-letter. A word. How we
Alexa. I just say Echo. I say Echo or Amazon Voice Services. Yeah, they're going to add. Kenmore is adding Echo functionality. Wow, and I imagine a dash button too, because if you have a washer dryer and you don't run out of soap, you just push the button and guess where that button doesn't go to Sears. It is an amazing thing, and it's hard. I would imagine it's hard. First of all, in the current political climate, I don't think there'll be much antitrust action anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
But
they're busy.
They're busy. You know, all these Goldman Sachs guys, the last thing they want to do is shut down companies. But even so, it would be hard to prosecute Amazon, because Amazon can rightly say, well, we have competition in every single market. There's a store on every corner.
Yeah.
How could you say we have a monopoly?
Right.
People shop with us. We dominate because we're better.
Right. And most of our products are from other companies selling their products.
They're
through
smart
us.
That way, right?
Yeah,
because you're right. They're empowering Sears.
But if we can get back to this refrigerator thing, I think what they're really gearing toward is the future of fridges, where it's not just like barcodes or whatever, where they'll have AI looking at what's in the fridge and determining what you're low on, what you need more of. And in fact, they're working on it in their secret store. Well, not secret. Their
not so secret.
Their store in at their headquarters,
their
grocery store.
Yeah,
where you supposedly are supposed to take out products without paying. And the way they do that is a combination of, like, you pick something up, the shelf has a scale on it, so it knows that, oh, it's this much lighter. That's about the amount of a yogurt. It looks at the person's history, because using face recognition, that person buys a lot of yogurt. It looked like yogurt in the AI. They just picked up yogurt. Like, so it's using all these different sensors and AI together to figure out what food products are that people are removing.
So
now that is going straight into refrigerators.
Are we giving them too much power when we use Echoes, when we shop in the Amazon stores? Obviously, all of these things are almost, they're probably loss leaders in order to gain data. And once they have all that data, then they can eat the world. Should we be thinking now about not participating? I don't, Greg, you're in the UK. You don't even have the choice, right?
I think the thing about Amazon ultimately is the same as what we have with Google and Facebook and Netflix. They just have so much data, they can outcompete their
competitors.
That's right.
They have a huge advantage. There's at some point an insurmountable advantage.
To a certain extent.
Everything that they it's all about the data. And the second thing is that these companies are technology companies, whereas Sears and Walmart made the mistake of thinking that they were management companies or
retailers.
Sales companies.
Yeah.
You know.
What were they thinking?
Well, yeah, and they didn't sort of understand the trend that technology is really. So the mistake I made about Amazon 5-10 years ago, when I was up on, I used to wander around Wall Street talking to investors and, you know, discussing this point, was I made the mistake of thinking that Amazon was a retail company or whatever. And it turns out that they're absolutely and utterly a technology company, and they're building a technology platform that can sell anything. It is a fulfillment business. For example, McDonald's Corporation, this is something I learned a while ago, is actually not a fast food company. It's a real estate trust. And the secret to McDonald's success is that every time they open a store, they open the land. They own the land that the property's on. And so McDonald's...
It's a real estate company.
It's a real estate trust, right? And the fast foods kind of justifies owning the portfolio and generates enough money to fund the purchase of more and more land. So
we learned that about a movie theaters here in Petaluma, because the movie theater, we had one movie theater some years ago, and they were sitting on a lot of land, which they sold for a shopping mall. Mm-hmm. And we're not in the movie business. See ya. They didn't open another theater. They just moved on. Mm-hmm. So that's not an unusual. Radio stations, a lot of people think radio, terrestrial broadcast radio, is really about real estate, the land the stations own in their towers, as opposed, because they certainly aren't making any money, you know, or not much money in broadcasting.
There's good money in owning, weirdly, there's good money in owning radio stations right now, because they have a right to a certain amount of frequency.
That's
every
right.
radio station has a license.
Government
and
license, yeah.
There are new standards coming up in the 5G networking, so the successor to 4G, that needs those radio frequencies to operate. And there's a consortium of rich people like Michael Dell and, you know, the high big names
they're
who are throwing
spectrum,
you know,
by buying radio stations.
They're buying up radio stations right the way across America so they can then sell them on later on into a 5G
network. Another kind of real estate, isn't it?
It is. If you own that spectrum, you wouldn't even sell it. You'd rent it.
Right.
So you do like you do in London, where the land is owned on a 100-year lease.
Yeah.
And at the end of 100 years, the license comes back to you, and then you still own it. Right?
And in fact, the Chinese government owns many of the radio stations in the United States, including in Washington, D.C. Yeah, this is something that Reuters broke open a couple of years ago. It's kind of an interesting story.
They're going to be able to cash in more because Clear Channel, one of the biggest radio stations in the U.S., has so much debt that they're – clearly in play over the next year. They cannot pay back their debt.
Yeah.
In comes China.
Yep. But I don't think it's an investment. I think it's pro-Beijing propaganda type of things.
On these Washington, D.C. stations?
Oh, yeah. WCRW, which is the Washington, D.C. one. But they own many across the U.S. and around the world. But they have, I think they have 33 stations in the U.S.
Wow.
Owned by the Chinese government.
Wow.
So kind of interesting. Why I listen to podcasts.
I Heart Media, that's why I do podcasts. I ostensibly have a career in radio.
American owned.
But I think it's better to work in podcasts these days. I Heart Media, who I disclosure work for, the radio show I do is owned by their syndicating arm, Premier Networks, has $20 billion in debt and really no way to pay it off.
Yeah.
So there's a reckoning day coming very soon for them.
They just repainted their building where I work. Like down the street.
Paint's cheap.
Come on, guys. There's the problem.
They're selling it. They're fixing it up.
They're getting it all nice and pretty.
You don't want to look like you've got $20
billion. Yeah, yeah, that's right. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more. Greg Farrow is here for the Packet Pushers Network, a great podcast, and his two beers shows on YouTube are also fascinating, I think. I was watching just a little bit before the show. He has one beer when he writes it and then another beer when he delivers it.
That's right. Well, sometimes it might be more, but you'll never know.
He didn't tell you how big the beer is.
It's good English beer, so it's okay. Thank you for being here, Greg. We like that. And thank you for coming back early from Prague. Prague is a beautiful city.
Oh, gosh. Speaking of beer, definitely going to go back there real soon.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I think Czechs practically invented beer.
Pilsner.
The Germans are going to get mad at me.
Yeah.
They make a fine Pilsner, though. Also with us, Mike Elgin from, lots of places. You see his writing in Computer World and Fast Company, all over the place. But don't forget
Gastronomad.net.
Last chance. One lucky couple.
That's right.
It's going to get to join Mike and Amira and some of the best chefs, including the best baker in Spain.
That's right.
In September.
That's right, September. And it's going to be a week of spectacular foodie adventure.
How many couples total?
It's going to be 8.
So you've sold out 7, and now you've got room for one more couple.
6 people, and then one more couple. So it's a very small group.
Oh, 6 people.
Yeah. Six people we have now, and then we're going to have 8. So
it's a very
small group. Plus Amir and I, and we have some people helping us. And so it's a very, very small group. And
Kevin and Nadia will be there.
They will as well.
And Princess Squishy Face.
She's going to be very helpful, I'm sure.
She's the cutest baby you've ever seen. Yeah.
But we're going to really, really by the time this week is over, we're going to understand tapas.
I can't wait.
We're going to understand Spanish wine. We're going to really.
We're going to do this. We can't do this one. And Fez, I think we can't. But
yeah, we got some coming up that
we're going to do. Maybe next year. I really would like this. Also here from Engadget, formerly of TMZ, the 30 Mile Zone.
That's so long ago.
I know, but I love saying it.
I love TMZ.
Roberto Baldwin. That's where you made your bones, right?
It is. TMZ. It is. I learned a lot about writing and writing in a way that doesn't get you sued.
Yeah.
I learned a lot
That's a useful skill.
No, it's a very useful skill. It was, and I learned a lot about sitting down with a lawyer while writing.
Yeah.
Like what you can and cannot say. Like they were like, Robbie, write this. And then I would write it. And then I would go and I would sit with the lawyer. And
I would like every once in a while.
Tell me yay or nay. And then Harvey would come in and they'd have an argument over like one word.
He wanted to do it.
And he would like, what about this word? She's like, we can't say this word, but about this word. And I'm like, well, what about this? Yeah.
Because Harvey is a lawyer, actually.
Harvey, yes. Or was a lawyer. I don't know how that works. But yeah, he went to law school.
Because there's many of the time where I wish I had a counselor. I could whisper and, no, I'm sorry, I can't say that.
Yeah.
Leo.
You can't say that. I learned a lot about what I can and cannot say.
Yeah.
It's actually very helpful.
Very useful media.
Unfortunately, you can't tell us what it is.
Yeah, sorry.
And it doesn't come up much at Engadget, I don't think, probably.
Yeah, there's not a lot of writing about whether or not someone's on cocaine or not. Can't say it was cocaine because you didn't have the police have it? Have they done a test on it?
Suspicious white powder.
Suspicious white powder.
All around his mouth. It could have been sugar donuts. We don't know.
Could have been sugar donuts.
Could have been. Don't know.
He was a cop, you know, probably eating donuts.
Yeah. He seemed a little excitable.
Donuts are underrated, I think.
Well, apparently there are people in our audience who feel exactly the same way. Do they have donuts in Germany? They do. Okay, just check. Because I don't want to go there if they don't. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. Just a great company. Very techno-savvy. And I can tell you, it sounds like hyperbole. It sounds like I'm making something up when I say the best lender in the country. But if you go to their website, if you go to rocketmortgage.com/twit and the number 2, and scroll down a little bit, you'll see all of those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. See, I'm not making it up. Number 1 in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination for the last 7 years. And I'm sure 2017, they're going to add that little trophy there. And number 1 for mortgage servicing for the last 3 years. So they really are the best lender in the country. And because they're tech savvy, they decided that they could make a better experience for us geeks. The mortgage approval process is not... It's practically a 19th century process. You go to a bank, you bring a box of paperwork, you'll maybe even fax stuff. It's primitive and it takes a long time. The last loan we got when we bought our house 3 years ago, Lisa and I took, we just checked, it took 3 months. 3 months. And we were still faxing stuff. They kept saying, we want more. Rocket Mortgage wasn't around then. From now on, goodbye paperwork. Hello, Rocket Mortgage. And it's transparent. You get the confidence you need when you're buying a home or refinancing. You can do that there. You'll know the details. You'll be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. You could provide all of the paperwork, everything online with a touch of a button. You can do it on your phone. And because it's all computerized, they crunch those numbers fast. They analyze all the options. They're going to give you the best possible loan based on assets, income, credit, just for you. And they're going to do that not in months, not in weeks, not in days. They're going to do that in minutes right there while you're there. You could be at an open house applying for a loan. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and then mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twit and the number 2, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage. .com/twit and the number 2. And we thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage so much for their support. They've been with us more than a year now. Great support of This Week in Tech and all of our shows. I loved this mic drop moment. TechCrunch interviewed a guy named Rodney Brooks, founding director. This guy's got cred. Founding director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab. He was co-founder of iRobot, the Roomba company, Rethink Robotics. Movie. Connie Loizos of TechCrunch was interviewing him and asked him about Elon Musk. Remember, Elon's been saying lately, we got to do something. The AI is going to take over the world. She said, Elon Musk, you're writing a book on AI, so I have to ask you, Rodney. Elon Musk expressed this again this past weekend, that AI is, in Elon's words, an existential threat to humans. Like it's like the guy's seen all the Terminator movies. He knows. Agree or disagree, Rodney Brooks says there are quite a few people out there who've said that AI is an existential threat. Stephen Hawking, astronomer Royal Martin Rees, who's written a book about it. They all share a common thread in that they don't work in AI.
Yeah, exactly.
For those who work in AI, we know how hard it is to actually get anything to work
right
through the product level. And I think people who are on the ground with AI realize that it's primitive. Even things like Amazon's Echo or Siri. He says the reason people, including Elon, make this mistake, when you see somebody do something, like play chess or Go Master, and we understand what's involved because we understand how humans think. We understand the competence and the training and the brains that it takes. But when you see, for instance, DeepMind's AlphaGo beat the Chinese Go champion, you think, oh, this machine is so smart, it can do anything. He said, but I was with DeepMind in London about 3 weeks ago, and they admitted things could easily have gone very wrong. It can't do anything.
Yeah, it's really good at playing
Go. It can play Go. It's a machine.
If you used any of the sort of bots, you remember Messenger bots?
Yeah.
If you've used any of those, you know that AI is still sort of not so hot.
It's Eliza level, yeah. Right? It's not sophisticated. So, and then she said, well, Elon's point is we need to regulate it before it gets smart, mm-hmm. right? It's not smart. Yes, I know it's not smart, but it's going to get smart. We got to regulate it now. Rodney Brooks says, so you're going to regulate now. Well, and this is very, I thought of you, Greg Farrow, when I read this logical refutation. He says, First, if you're going to have a regulation now, either it applies to something and changes something in the world that exists, or it doesn't apply to anything. If it doesn't apply to anything, what the hell's the regulation for, right?
Right.
So tell me what behavior you want to change, Elon. There's no, you can't write a regulation today because you don't have an example of what you want to prevent. And then this is the mic drop moment. By the way, Rodney Brooks goes on, let's talk about regulation on self-driving Teslas, because that's an issue.
And that's driven by AI.
AI!
Self-driving vehicles are all driven by AI. AI is huge. Without AI, self-driving cars don't work.
I think what Brooks's point is, you can't trust the Tesla to drive yourself. They maybe should be regulating that, because that is something that is in the world.
I actually wonder if Elon Musk is being misinterpreted here. I hear him talking about the social impact and the impact of big data much more as a form of AI.
So, and we've kind of talked about that. I mean, when you say Amazon's going to eat the world, Sears is out of business, that's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of people.
That's right.
Who aren't going to be working.
That's right. So if you think about artificial intelligence in – let's try and bring some practicality around this. They're talking about truck drivers being removed from the roads within 30 years. And I think it's something like 7% of jobs in the U.S. are actually truck drivers.
That's right.
So you're going to have – so that's one. You're talking about manufacturing jobs. There was an article a few weeks back about an entire iron manufacturing facility, and it employs 10 people because it's fully robot.
Right.
It's fully automated using robots. And artificial intelligence will continue to do that. I think we're also seeing articles come out about artificial intelligence. Like, your point about chatbots is well taken, but keep in mind that chatbots don't actually involve real money, so nobody's actually doing
no
real
one's
science
investing.
There.
Nobody's investing in chatbots.
Everyone's just like, chatbots. I'm like, no.
No.
Because
all you have to do is use them once. They're so annoying.
Yes, and then you stop
using them.
Have a look
at the guy who did the website with the parking tickets and the speeding fines.
Yes, he's done
very
well.
He's using ML or AI-like activities to basically put lawyers out of business. So if it starts taking out the middle class, the professional middle class, as well as the working class, you actually have something that is ripe for disruption in society, because you're going to have massive social disruption if artificial intelligence replaces those people. And I think this is the point that Elon is trying to make. It's not that some machine is going to take over the world, although that's certainly possible. I mean, you look at what Petya did. And not Petya, you know, the outbreak of the WannaCry.
Yes.
Those are, I actually see those as like cyber warfare. I think Russia was literally, you know, detonating a piece of cyber technology in Romania, wherever it was, Ukraine, as a bit like an atomic test back in the 1960s. You know, you let off the atomic bomb to say, hey, I've got atomic bombs, and to tell your, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think artificial intelligence could be used in combination with cyber warfare to have an enormous impact, and that what he's trying to say to the lawmakers or to the government is, you need to wake up to this. There is massive social change coming, driven by technology, and probably simplifying it to AI, because your average senator is a bit of an idiot. You know, their whole reason to try is pretty straightforward. And that you need to be planning for these things. You need to start legislating, not to prevent AI, but to work out how you're going to run the country in, you know, 20 years' time, when 50% of your population doesn't have to work for a living.
I have been using, there's one bot I have been using called Trim. Have you ever heard of this one? This is a financial bot that you have to give it access to your finances, but then it, you can show this. I don't think there's anything in here, Beth. And then it will show you, it will tell you about transactions, but it also shows you about recurring transactions and gives you the chance to cancel the transaction. So
You chit chat with the bot. You say, hey, how much money do I have in my savings account?
I want to do a snap. There we
go. It'll just tell you.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting. I mean, so, but this isn't really a bot. No. This is, I don't know, it's not AI.
The biggest, the funny thing to me about fear over AI is that it is potentially scary because of the power it gives to people. I would trust the morality of a person more, of an AI more than the morality of a
Well, at least it's predictable.
Right. So we always think, we do this in biology too, there's cloning and all that kind of stuff. Oh, what should the US do? What should the UK do? What should Germany do? What is North Korea going to do with AI? What is, you know what I mean? So I people scare me a lot more, you know, augmented people.
You have to stay ahead. You have to stay ahead of them. I mean, DARPA last year at DEF CON, they had the cyber challenge.
Right.
Where they had AI machines battling each other, basically hacking each other.
Yeah.
And they're like, we have to do this because other nation states are going to do this. So we're having hackers work on this now, but DARPA's working on basically AI hackers.
Right.
Because if they don't, you're going to fall behind, and you're going to lose to Russia, to North Korea, to whoever, to random, you know. Well, usually it's a nation state if you're talking about that much power.
Right.
But you have to, you know, you have to have somebody who is researching and working on this, because if you don't, someone else is.
Exactly. Elon sent this picture to Rodney Brooks as his response. It's a picture of him just after Amber Heard kissed him. I don't, you know. Maybe that's...
It's just a simulation. What's the difference?
Is that... By the way, would Harvey allow that? I don't know. I'm assuming there's lipstick on the cheek. She's got red lipstick. It seems like the shades match. I'm just
circumstantial.
Assuming. Circumstantial. There doesn't seem to be any donut powder available at all.
No donut. In that
To me, I think that the most culture-changing impact of AI will simply be the augmentation of human... We're going to interact with our computers through an AI virtual assistant.
I feel like that's kind of what we do with Echo already. And it's primitive, but it sure is nice.
But as it gets less primitive, it's going to be amazing when the AI can figure out what we mean, no matter how we say it.
In no way is that threatening. Is it?
It's only threatening
it's
when
a killer robot.
It's threatening the wrong how you use it. Using it.
It's threatening how you use it. I mean, if you're like, oh, well, Amazon's not going to do something crazy, and then Jeff leaves the company because he retires, and then rando, you know, somebody comes and
well, that is a concern. All that data sitting there
is he's a supervillain and
valuable. Yeah.
The other way that these virtual assistants are going to affect culture is the new Rock movie, which Rock and Siri are starring in a new movie coming out, which The Rock said on Twitter is going to, quote, drop tomorrow, unquote. I don't know what drop means. Come out in theaters tomorrow.
Yeah. He just announced an upcoming movie with Siri. Really?
Yeah, really. So
really?
Yeah, really. So in the poster, there's all this crazy stuff happening with The Rock in the middle holding an iPhone.
It's called The Rock x Siri Dominate the Day. This is a joke. Oh, it's Apple's doing it. It's Apple.
It's Apple.
Yeah. This is just this is Apple marketing. Watch the full film at youtube.com/apple. It's an ad.
We're all going to watch it, Leo.
I'm going to watch it right now.
Siri's so bad. This Rock just...
I don't think it's...
Is it if the movie is based on The Rock
who's
just getting
dumber,
in
the
trouble over and over and over again because Siri is so bad, then yeah, I would totally watch that because Siri is not good.
I'd like to see The Rock crush Siri.
He's just like, come on, Siri.
Lisa and I have a game because, you know, we'll ask Siri stuff and it's just the most... it's just
so bad.
Yesterday we were in going to a concert in San Jose, and I was looking for a place to eat. And I said, as you're supposed to say, can I get restaurants near me? You wonder, does anybody at Apple actually use this? So it says, yes, here's the restaurants near me. It shows me a list, flashes it briefly, and then starts one by one reading the names of the restaurant and saying, would you like me to contact them? It hid the list, and I, no. And then it goes to the next one, no. And it's like, you can't, the information's there, but it hid it. Yeah. And now it's bothering me with this meaningless conversation. I just want locations. I'm just looking for ratings. You do it on Google with Google Assistant, works exactly as expected. You feel like nobody used this.
And I feel like it's gotten worse. I remember
it's gotten
Siri
worse.
When it was just an app, and it was great.
And Apple keeps saying Siri every time they get on stage. Siri's better than ever.
The funny thing is that Apple is really good with AI in improving products. So personally, I think, and this is going to be controversial in the chat room probably, I personally think that the most elegant consumer electronics product that ever existed is AirPods.
I agree. I really like
AirPods. Take it out, it stops. Yeah. It knows if it's...
They're not perfect, but they're pretty cool.
But the elegant... So that's AI behind the scenes, knowing if it's in your ear or not, knowing if they're... And it's just... That's what Apple's really good at.
Greg, what's your favorite AI? You can't use a lot of this stuff, right? You don't have Echo in the UK. Or no, you do have Echo now in the UK.
Google
Home.
We
have Echo, we have Siri. I have I haven't bothered with an Echo because if it's Amazon technology, it'll be second rate. Anything like the Amazon Fire or my Kindle's a piece of junk. I deeply regret buying that thing. What a waste of time that was. So I tried using Siri and it doesn't work either. I've tried using it. I've got a bunch of Philip Hue lights and stuff, when, you know, IoT and all that sort of stuff. And that is just like such an arcane experience. If I didn't have 25 years of IT behind me, I wouldn't be able to make those lights.
I know. I often wonder how normal people live these days.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they buy an IoT device and it doesn't work and they get pissed and they never use it again.
Yeah.
And by the way, what's the deal with Siri's British accent? That is not an accent. That doesn't
exist.
Do you
use the British accent of Siri?
It doesn't use it.
No, I use the Australian accent.
Australian is way better.
My voice is just enough like Australian that it doesn't work for British, but it's just enough British that it doesn't work for Australian. So maybe that's what I'm doing wrong.
The British accents, it's like a combination of London neighborhoods or something. It's really unpolished. Unlike the American and Australian ones, it jumps around.
The male and the female British voices are quite different too.
Yeah, the female one is the one that I heard that is just so off.
Is it under UK? Is it under
If you go
English,
to the Siri,
it'll be English, Ireland, United Kingdom. Okay, change language. Okay.
So you also need to be careful here with the term AI, when most of what we're doing today is machine learning. So machine learning is where you just pass some statistical analysis.
But doesn't machine learning fall under the umbrella of AI
AI is very different to machine learning. Machine learning is you pass it through a certain set of mathematical equations, usually basic statistical analysis, but there's more advanced.
It's a precursor to AI. But it isn't AI by itself.
I always thought it was.
Yeah, eventually to build AI, you have to be able to build neural networks or networks that are where the data associations can be made dynamically and quite fluidly. And we're not there yet. Yeah. There's no live applications around artificial intelligence. Most of what we have today is ML. So just be patient. There's many years to go because there's not enough AI mathematicians around to make those algorithms run yet. But most importantly is there's not enough data. So if you're a research scientist or if you're a postgrad or a master's student, you can have all the theory about artificial intelligence, but until you've got a data set to train the AI on, you've got nothing.
I guess
who's got all the data?
It has to be said, though, Greg, that your point of view is in the minority. I think the majority of people consider artificial intelligence to be an umbrella term that includes lots of things, including machine learning.
But I think Greg's point is well taken, especially in this conversation about how smart is AI, because machine learning isn't smart at all. It's just big data, right? And if you extract the information, you know, if you separate the two, then we really are in the early stages of AI. It really is barely doing anything. Let me just ask, this is the British Siri, just curious what she sounds or... He, right? I should use the male voice?
The female voice is the one that I heard that's completely out of whack.
Okay, well, let me use the female voice then.
I'm Siri, your virtual assistant.
Oh, she sounds quite
nice. That sounds nice.
I kind of like her.
I'm Siri, your virtual assistant.
But ask a complicated question where they string together.
Show me restaurants near me. This is the one.
Okay, here's what I found.
Oh, now it's giving me the list.
Oh, it's just because it's on camera.
Yeah, you bastard. I hate your guts. All right.
Sometimes I like to save like stupid things that Siri tells me. It's like, sorry, Robbie, record. I wasn't able to find any door locks this time. I asked it to play a song.
Oh, I know. but it was by the Warlocks, so that's, you know, to be fair.
No.
I think that Siri often says some of the funniest things I've ever heard, unintentionally.
Unintentionally, right.
Because she's so goofy.
Right.
Hey, there is a new movie coming to town. We were watching the trailer. I thought we'd play it again here in just a second. Ready Player One. Everybody loved the Ernest Cline novel. Yep. Spielberg is making the movie. I want to take a look at the trailer. And that can launch a conversation about virtual reality,
yeah.
What Apple is doing with augmented reality. Scoble's really gone off the deep end this week.
He really has.
What did he say this time?
Siri's God is, I think, his new thing. He's crazy. He thinks Apple's going to eat the world.
He's been saying that for years.
He and I got into it on Facebook about he says that in September, Apple is going to kill virtual reality.
Yes. Or let's say augmented reality. Well,
but he said virtual reality. I said augmented reality.
Augmented reality, yeah.
Well, virtual reality, even then, it's going to be Pokemon Go level.
They're going to invent the category. They're not going to destroy it. They're going to create it.
All right. Well, we'll find out in a moment when we return. But first, a word from dinner. Dinner is, I tell you what, I actually really owe a debt of gratitude to Blue Apron. I have rediscovered cooking with Blue Apron. Yeah. I can't express this more vividly. It seems simple. It's the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. So we get a box once a week. We go online, we go to the menus, we choose the three meals we're going to get. You can get it for a couple or for a family of four, and they have more kid-friendly ingredients. But let's just look, see. So sweet and spicy beef sounds good. Crispy chicken tenders and hot honey. Salmon and frika salad. I don't even know what frika is. So you pick the three. You get the box. Everything's fresh. Everything's perfect. They have really figured out how to do the processing, because you never get like a old leaf or anything.
But you started to hit the nail on the head. The way you feel when you're cooking,
exactly,
you feel like you're a chef.
So we always focus on the mechanics of this. Right. You get the box, you get exactly the right thing, and blah blah blah. But it's like you have a sous chef who's done all the prep work. You have exactly what you need, and then you start cooking, and you're going to be able to do this in half an hour, 40 minutes, and you feel like a chef. The room starts to fill with these amazing aromas.
You become extremely arrogant, and you start yelling at people.
Get out
like
of here. No soup for you, I say. No, it is really. And by the way, we've learned how to make things that we make again and again. There's a salad now that we make again. And actually, Amira, it was like when we came over to dinner the other that time, and Amira was making a kale salad. It was so good. And we've made that over and over again because we saw her make it. We learned. And that became a part of our repertoire. Yeah. And that's what happens with Blue Apron. These things become a part of your repertoire. They don't repeat. So they only repeat recipes at a minimum of once a year. The ingredients are perfect, every bit as good, if not better, than you would get if you did the shopping yourself. Actually, they do a better job of picking the produce and the meats and everything. And by the way, the meat's phenomenal cuts. Fresh delivery. It's a refrigerated box. On the menu, seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers. Creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges. We had this the other day. Chili butter steaks. It's chili butter. They have a chili pepper sauce. It's from Italy that you mix in with the butter, with Parmesan potatoes and spinach. It was a hit, a huge hit. I've wilted more spinach with Blue Apron than I ever had before. I've become the fan of the wilted spinach. They have partnerships with 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. So you're getting the best food. Their freshness guarantees promises everything arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. They've sent me emails. This is a company that does customer service, right? They've sent me emails saying you're going to get yellow tomatoes instead of red ones because the yellow were better this week. Just wanted to let you know. And it's that kind of thing. Look, you got to try this. For getting a family excited about cooking for your sweetheart, for date night, there's nothing better. Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu. And by the way, you're going to get three meals free with your first purchase. And free shipping when you go to blueapron.com/twit. We actually cook two and give one to our to Lisa's parents, my in-laws.
Yeah, it's more than they say older. It is.
Easily. We feed a family of three with every meal. But they love it. So we pick one that they're going to love. And it's all ready to go. And they just love it. It's a great gift. blueapron.com/twit or do it for yourself. It's a gift for you. It's a better way to cook. And I promise you. I think you know if you've been listening, if you listen to our shows, I've been talking about cooking a lot more lately. It's because of Blue Apron. Thank you, Blue Apron. we also been talking a lot about VR and AR. That's because of Robert Scoble. Curse you, Robert Scoble. He is all about Apple going to be this new iPhone. It's going to be the most amazing. He's actually doing a better job than Apple on getting me excited about the new iPhone.
Yes. Yeah. And I really am super excited about ARKit and what that's going to bring about. We've already seen some demos. It's fantastic.
Very impressive what people have been able to just cobble together very quickly. So this is what really gets you inspired. Comic-Con was this week. And Steven Spielberg came with a trailer for his new movie, the one based on Ernest Cline's novel that I know all of you read because it was the geek novel of the year a couple of years ago.
Never read it.
Ready Player One.
I'm a horrible nerd.
Leave immediately. Like,
I'm just a horrible.
I'll tell you what, just read the.
This is what I know. You like nostalgia? Read this book.
No. Read the first page. That's all.
Okay. Yeah.
And then if you can put it down. You won't.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You haven't read it either,
Greg. You have to read it from end to end. Yeah, no, I love the book as well.
Oh, yeah, good.
I thought that, unlike a lot of books like that, the sort of lose pace in the middle.
Oh, no.
They managed to make it run all the way through. Yeah. So the writing was just outstanding. Yeah.
So here is the trailer. And I have to say, I'm pretty excited about this from Ready Player One. And watch, Mike pointed this out to me. Watch how Steven Spielberg dramatizes the experience of VR. Because that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
In our day, it was. They had to dramatize smoking marijuana.
Right.
Like, right? Or the acid trip. And they would make the camera go, ooh. Yeah.
I don't know. They did a pretty good job on Lawnmower Man.
Actually, that was the VR movie of all time.
That was the VR movie, Lawnmower Man.
All right, well, compare this to Lawnmower Man.
All right.
I live here in Columbus, Ohio.
No lawns in the future, though.
No.
In 2045, it's still ranked the fastest growing city on Earth. But it sure doesn't seem
Columbus,
like
Ohio.
They called our generation the missing millions. Missing not because we went anywhere. There's nowhere left to go. Nowhere. Except the Oasis.
This is putting on the VR goggles. In 2035, we're going to still have to wear those crap visors? I'm disappointed.
We're going to be all sweaty and everyone's going to have acne around their face.
So now he's in VR. People are flying around.
That's actually from the book. Dancing is zero.
Dancing. This is Spielberg's idea. So there are 80s things. Like, that was Iron Giant. There are 80s icons and references, as there were in the book, of course. Mm. The best VR game, though, is coming up. They're going to do this driving game where it shows the guys walking into, you know, a kind of weird minimalist environment.
It's an organized, very organized team video game playing in VR.
And then it shows their VR experience of this, which looks like, you know, Fast and Furious.
And they're robots in VR.
Yeah. And there's apparently Rush in VR as well.
Thank God.
You know, anything,
need more prog rock in VR. I mean, come on. If anything should be VR, it's prog rock. And get some sticks.
Unfortunately, I think every movie now has to have all of this car chase, crash, explosion stuff.
A lot of that turns into video game tie-ins.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of scenes in modern movies that get lifted.
So he rips off the visor, goes,
it's too much.
Wow.
I've been doing this all the time, but that time was too much.
Is this the VR game of the year? Ooh. It's not till next year, so don't get too excited.
It's the perfect novel for a movie because you can have live action, which is very interesting. You have CGI, which is necessary based on the subject matter. And it's just a fascinating story with lots of nostalgia, so the public generally can, you know, the kids will love it and their parents will love it because of the nostalgia. Even when I was reading it, I'm like, oh, somebody's got to make this into a movie.
Every once in a while you read a novel that was clearly written with the idea of, you know, we're going to option this sucker.
People love
it. It's going to be cheap to make.
So maybe more now
than
ever.
It's all going to be green.
Actors
are going to be in front of a green screen. They're not going to have to go out on site.
They're not going
to
have to come to work. They'll digitize them and then say, thanks very much. We'll send you the royalties.
Yep. Yeah, so, but I mean, already they're doing things like, I would imagine that almost all of that movie, if not all of it, was done in front of a green screen and everything else was CGI'd, which makes them incredibly cheap to make.
Right. Yes.
Not only cheap to make, but very accurate. You know exactly how much money you're going to spend to make a movie. And this is one of the impacts of technology is that in movies, we never used to know how much it would take. You know, you go out on site and what is it? There's a story in The Matrix. They could only get the studios to give them $20 million. to make the whole of the Matrix.
Right.
So what they did was spent $20 million making the first 15 minutes and then went back to the studio and said, here's the first 15 minutes. We want the rest of the $200 million.
That's a good trick.
You know, and so I think we're seeing a transition here is if you can turn video production or movie production into a factory production line, you get control of your costs and you know what things start to look at. And that's what we're seeing with Netflix and Amazon Video. Yeah. There's a transition there where a lot of the CGI is, you know, definitely able to be produced at a much lower cost than going out with a camera and taking shots of someone.
I wanted to show that trailer because, you know, that was the folly of the first, you know, the prequel, the Star Wars prequels. Like, well, we're just going to make everything CGI.
Yeah.
And it's everything CGI is fine.
It's soulless.
But you have to have, you know, you need to have a good, you know, you have Steven Spielberg attached to this. You have good actors attached to it. Without that, without a story, without a good director, without good actors, you're going to end up with the prequels.
One of the strangest things about Rogue One was that one of the characters, presumably the actor died or something, but one of the characters was just CGI. Two of them, okay. And
Emperor Tarkin, I've only seen half of it. It was poorly done in CGI, but if you didn't know ahead of time, you might have missed it. Mm-hmm. But once you knew and looked at Emperor Tarkin, or I think it was Tarkin, right?
Yeah.
It was like...
Oh, it was surreal.
And then Carrie Fisher's part was CGI, because she's obviously was a little
didn't
older
get that far in the movie yet. Yeah. But also...
Oh, sorry, I don't mean to ruin it.
Darn it, I was going to... So, but the other weird CGI thing was Tron. That was one of the things that ruined Tron, was they showed the young... Yeah. Actor, which is Jeff Bridges, and that just did not work.
It's the uncanny valley.
Yeah,
you still need people. They still look like oh god. Oh,
so the other reason I showed that trailer is I want to show the glossy Hollywood vision of AR and VR compared to. Well, this is an AR kit demo that was posted on YouTube. Everybody's very excited.
Not exactly Ready Player One.
Everybody's really excited about
this. Very cool. I mean, how cool is that?
Well,
I mean,
this is real, right? Yeah. You're actually going to be able to do this presumably when the new iPhone comes out. One of the interesting things is she's using an HTC Vive with AR kit, and in fact, it's.
That painting in 3D space is amazing. Cool. That whatever that thing is, character doing the drawing is not amazing.
It's a blob. It's a blob that's her. It's a blob that's her.
It's not as creepy as Jeff Bridges.
That's by the way, I'm sure why it looks like that. If they'd made it look like her, it would have been creepy as hell.
Yeah. So I want to show a video. I think Anthony has it. This is an experiential marketing gimmick video made by somebody in, I think, Peru. And they're handing out people stuck in traffic, so
it's
they give them goggles,
right? Google cardboard, basically,
And they gave them the app and all that kind of stuff. And this is a representation of what they see. Now, this is how it's going to transform advertising.
Oh my God! He's driving down a normal highway, but there's a giant hose. So that's AR. This is a giant inflatable flamingo.
The placement of virtual objects in real space.
And you're saying these will be marketing objects. This is a
pretty glossy. Version of what ARKit is going to bring us in like next year.
Right.
We're going to see virtual stuff. It's not going to be that good, but it's going to be good. And things will be placed in space that will be mind-blowing.
Well, and Apple will, you know, to Scoble's credit, Apple will have a huge lead in this. I mean, ARKit is clearly something that's developers like, and it's easy enough to use.
It'll be like everything else. They'll dominate with their app store, and these are apps that we're going to be downloading. But Apple's app store didn't end all other app stores. It basically, you know, they help create the market, and then the Play Store is even bigger than the app store, and there's a thriving market on Android and even other platforms. So his point is, it's going to kill everything else that's VR. That is not going to happen.
No.
They're going to push augmented reality directly into the mainstream very rapidly, which I think will be great for other companies doing AR. And I think that VR is going to be kind of like a back burner thing. It's sort of like mobile games versus console games. Console games are amazing, but a tiny minority of people actually play console games compared to how many
play mobile games.
VR is
going to be the Google Glass. Nobody wants to shove a thing on the front of their face, and the same reason that people didn't want.
Well, it's only a matter of time before all that stuff on your face is indetectable. And and I think Apple will get end of the market at that point. But all this work that's being done in AR for looking through your phone and tablet will be applicable to the world of glasses. This is, the most exciting thing that people underappreciate, which is that all this development work, I mean, it's a lot of work to create these virtual experiences and so on. all you need is glasses to project what's happening on the phone onto those glasses. And you can take your pick. You can look at it on the phone. You can look at it on the glasses.
Yeah, no, we're years away. Amazing. Well, we're years and years away from that. Transmitting, to do sufficient virtual reality, you need about, I think it's 30 or 40, sorry, I think it's sort of like 5 to 10 gigabits per second. And streaming that over a Bluetooth-style connection or a personal area network isn't going to happen anytime in the next
again, 5 to 10. I don't even want to talk about virtual reality because that's going to be nothing compared to augmented reality. And there are going to be a million solutions for this. Already there's a $99 set of glasses that are ridiculous. You're not going to wear them in public and all that kind of stuff. But what they do is they'd simply reflect virtual objects onto a curved piece of plastic that is part of the goggles. What are those called? But it's $99 to have an augmented reality experience.
The question I have is whether they'll be rejected like Google Glass was. So Google Glass was definitely seen as privacy intrusion. It was uncool. And I can remember being in bars in San Francisco, people be walking around with Google glasses and they'd be being verbally abused.
Well, that was only in San Francisco. There was literally no other place on earth where that took place.
San Francisco, or own Google Glass.
No one else was wearing Google Glass.
Did you see in Columbus, Ohio, a lot of Google Glass floating? No. You would have abused them.
Greg, I think we actually had this argument last time we did this show together, which is that this idea that Google Glass tried and failed, and now they've come out of nowhere with this new product, that's a false narrative put out by the tech press, which felt journalists don't make enough money to spend $1,500. They felt excluded through price, and so they went about.
I know, so all the people I know who had Google Glass were journalists who spent money.
Well, I certainly had.
We had a pair.
I worked at Wired at the time, and like four people on staff spent their own money for Google Glass.
But they were ultimately unimpressed.
But they wore them, and then they gave them to me, and I'm like, this is not comfortable.
So here's here's what actually happened.
Google, it better when you spend $1,500 for it, I want to point out.
Well, you have to like it. you at least have to tell your spouse you like it. Yeah. But anyway, here's what actually happened. Google came out with an extraordinarily innovative beta program. They said, not only we want you to try the hardware, we also want you to pay a fortune for it, and we want you to tell us how you're using it, because we have no idea how you're supposed to use this thing. They did it for a while. The one thing that made the narrative weird is at the very end, they said, you know what? Okay, we're opening it to the public. The public said, I don't think so.
And then what made it weird is when the initial video showed actual augmented reality. The initial Google Glass video showed actual augmented reality. And I spoke to augmented reality researchers, and they're like, that's not possible. And then it came out, and it wasn't actual
Google Glass
augmented
puts a screen in front of your face. That's all it
does.
Your
eyebrow.
Yeah, it was a screen that you had to do this.
But there actually was augmented reality. For example, the Magic Lens app, which started out on the phone, which translates signs into a new language right before your eyes using the same typeface, that was real augmented reality. But anyway, back to my point.
Somebody's saying something interesting, though. Gray Raven in the chat room. 10 years ago, people staring at 6-inch phones would have looked really stupid, right?
They still do.
I remember when I first experienced this, I was in Europe and saw people walking around looking at phones. I thought, that is crazy. Yeah. But now it's accepted. Yeah. It's everywhere. It's universal. Right. So much so that you don't notice it.
Well,
will we all get used to wearing some sort of augmented reality head?
I don't think we'll have to.
I think they look nice. They have to look nice and they have to work. Right. And I think Google's folly was they created this.
They overpromised.
They overpromised. They underdelivered.
What did they promise? And
they
when
promised
did they promise?
Real augmented reality. They showed a video and they're like, this is Google Glass. It's coming.
They had a gussied up demo exactly like every product that has ever existed. It was unrealistically. That video
It wasn't
just
even
saw
like was, slightly unrealistic. It was incredibly unrealistic compared to the actual product they gave out as beta.
And then they jumped out of a plane to show it off. I think Google's mistake was, as you said, overpromising, over-delivering, but it was also a step too far at a social level. People wearing them down the street could take a photo at a time when there was no Instagram, there was no Snapchat. This is my point is,
and then Snap Goggles came along and that was fine.
This was the Google Glass video.
This is my point is this
time
around it could work.
And I have to say, Roberto has a little bit of a point here.
Like, oh, here, the Google Glass is coming. This is awesome.
Yeah, he's going to put on his glass. And, oh, look.
And nobody who wears flip-flops could afford it either, by the way.
Well, you could only afford flip-flops after buying.
Exactly. And so, it comes out of your shoe
budget.
This
reminds me of Microsoft's HoloLens demos, which always imply a full field of view. And, you know, you're interacting with the world around you.
Yeah. So this is what we want.
This isn't even something Google Glass could have done.
Strand Books at 2:00.
But I guess what you're saying is, once you understand that what you're seeing isn't in front of you, but is effect over your right eyebrow, yeah, it's not so far off.
And you know, Epson had their industrial glasses, basically.
Well, Google Glasses, that was the point, amazing, is that Stephen Levy in Wired wrote a long article about how Google Glasses is now widely used in
they make airplanes
manufacture
with it.
And
Boeing like makes Epsons. Airplanes. But my point is that all of this stuff we're talking about happened under Google X. It was a research project. Right. And then at the end of it, they said, okay, now we're going to productize it. And everybody said, oh, it failed. No, they it was a research project. Then they're going to productize it. Now the product is out, and it's amazing, and they know what
well,
it's for.
Well,
it
is a little object lesson in not doing this kind of overpromising years before you can actually deliver something like
that. I mean, I wore some glasses the other day for bike riding, like a week or so ago. And it wasn't exactly this, but it was pretty close. So I'm like, okay.
It had
this,
a heads-up display.
Yeah, like a heads-up display. They had, I mean, and the company who built it actually builds the heads-up displays for jets, for people wearing those giant. Yeah, so I'm like, okay, now, okay, I can see how this is working. This is great. This makes sense.
I like the idea.
And the niche sort of market where it's like for manufacturing, for industrial uses, that's where AR started and where it's going to be for a while. But now they're like, okay, well, we're doing this for bicycles. Mm-hmm. And you can see, you know, there's sort of a little bit for motorcycles and there's sort of a little bit for here and there.
Scuba
and
divers.
I think augmented before AR, before VR, VR, I don't even want to talk about VR, AR is going to be huge, but you still have to get over that initial, we have to make something that people want to wear.
Right.
And that's when it comes down. Whoops,
I've been predicting this for a while, but within like 6 or 7 years, 8 years, when you go to get your glasses, they'll say, well, do you want the smart ones or the dumb ones? You know, when you pick your frames, you're like, well, okay, give me the smart ones. Okay, so here's a series of options. Okay, I'll take those. It's extra $200. And then you'll get little screens, kind of like Google Glass, but there won't be the big boom that comes out in front of your face. They'll be practically indistinguishable from ordinary glasses. There's a company that, a startup called, what are they called? Vue Glasses, V-U-E Glasses, in San Francisco. They don't do screens. They don't have a camera. But it's little blinking lights, and the most important part of all, which I think is really underrepresented, is the audio part of augmented reality. Bone conduction is the killer app for smart glasses, I think.
Yeah.
Because you want to be talking to your virtual assistant all day.
There's another technology that's never worked very well for me. Does it work for you? Can you
conduction?
That's how glass worked, kind of?
It did use bone conduction.
Yeah.
It only was on one side, whereas Vue glasses are on both sides.
Yeah.
But the point is that we're going to be wanting to, so here's a problem nobody worries about. We want to talk to our virtual assistant all day, our future selves 5 years from now. What technology gives us all day, you know, battery life and all that kind of stuff, not, you know, AirPods last, what, 2 hours or something like
that? Your phone does, though.
But that's not augmented. It's not on your
face. I think that's why Apple's doing everything on the phone. It seems apparently.
Let me, as someone who builds infrastructure as a profession, let me tell you that there's about as much chance of this happening as a pig getting in, not burning in hell.
What
happens?
Because
there's just not.
What about 5G? Would that make it possible?
No. You're talking like 5G is, yes, in theory, the 5G will give you 10 gigabits per second, but it's going to be shared with everybody.
Right.
And if you want to be able to save battery life, you have to shift to very low bandwidth connections. As soon as you're low bandwidth, no AR,
it's
no
probably
VR,
the case, though.
No,
what was the increase in data use when the iPhone came out? It was 10 or 20-fold. It's probably the case that before the iPhone came out, AT&T's engineers said, well, there's no way we could support that.
Yeah.
They're sorry, but they did. They made it work, but it just took years.
So right. if these glasses need 5G, and 5G is at best 5 years away, maybe longer. It's a little hard to tell. And even if it rolls out, it's not going to roll out everywhere in just a few years. It's going to be a 5 to 20 year rollout. So now you'll be in the situation. It'll be back like when the iPhones first came out, and you could use your iPhone on edge everywhere in the country, but 3G only in a couple of capital cities.
Right.
And that's going to hold your adoption back of these sorts of things.
But Greg, there's not one thing that is going to come out at some point in the future. Augmented reality in a rudimentary form is already here.
Yeah, and it's already breaking. Pokemon Go Fest was Saturday in Grant Park in Chicago.
Yeah.
And people were furious.
That's why I was avoiding Chicago.
People were furious. 20,000 Pokemon Go players gathered. And The internet didn't work.
World's None largest of the, gathering of virgins.
Yeah, people, when Niantic's president, John Hankey, took the stage, hey, I like Pokemon Go, the stage, he was greeted by an audience a few thousand deep, many of them chanting, fix your game, we can't play. Some more aggressive, this is from TechCrunch, some more aggressive attendees approached the stage to personally shout their discontent, and Niantic says, we're going to give you refunds in the form of $100 of Poke coins.
There's a company that has no idea about infrastructure. Niantic is it. Niantic, you know, never worked out how to scale up their servers. Their game was successful and they had outages.
It's true. Is this a surprise? Remember when Pokemon Go launched a year ago? Yeah. What short memories do we have?
I mean, these guys must be idiots. I mean, if you're going to hold... Seriously, you know when you have a conference with 30 to 50,000 people at it? The first thing that you do is you go and get the mobile phone companies to bring the mobile towers to your event.
Yep. Here's John Hankey coming on stage.
Couldn't even work it out.
Oh, that's harsh.
Thanks, Rachel.
Oh, man, this got to hurt. You're right, though. You're exactly right, Greg.
Yeah.
If there was ever a company you'd expect this to happen
to. Everybody.
These are technology companies. They should realize that if you put 30,000 people in a park, you're going to overload the base stations that surround the park.
Music festivals, right? They travel with towers.
Well, when Rene Ritchie was at this, we'll actually talk to him on Tuesday and find out what it really was like. But he said, you know, it's said that in Grant Park, you're lucky if you get one bar. I don't know how they're going to handle tens of thousands of...
And they just didn't do anything?
well, I said at the time, they'll probably have trucks coming out, just as you said, Greg, that T-Mobile and Sprint and Verizon AT&T will probably... I've seen them do it at South by Southwest, bring out cell tower trucks.
They'll only come if you talk to them, you book them, you have to book them months in advance, to pay them. You know, we did a podcast with the people from Live Nation, you know, the people who run the
concerts,
festivals.
Yeah.
And I was talking to them about the infrastructure build out. They spend the entire year, so for 6 months that the conferences run, they use the tech, and the next 6 months they spend rebuilding it and reworking the kit and the fiber optic cables and everything so that they can actually run a data network at these events. It's a serious, it's just, I've just got this vision of Niantic being like a bunch of kids going, it's all in the cloud, don't worry about it. We don't need to know anything about infrastructure.
No,
cloud,
it's true.
Cloud, blah, blah, blah. AWS will take care of it. Boom, done. You know?
You want to make people mad. Get them to come to Chicago with the promise of rare Pokemon. There's people there who have everything but, you know, a Unown or a Heracross, and they went. And then the worst thing happened, which is it pops up that Pokemon on the screen. You're ready to catch it, and the thing goes, I mean, that's how you make people really, as dumb as it sounds, that's how you make people really,
it's like
really
going to a music festival and not being any music.
Hey, I got to tell you, though, things can happen. We were going to a Live Nation concert, Lisa and I, on Thursday. We had tickets to see Matchbox 20 and the Counting Crows, a fine middle of the road.
I'm going to be a good guest and not say anything.
Good middle of the. Hey, I'm 60 years old. The fact that I'm going to see a rock band of any kind is impressive, right?
Well, I mean, either of those bands rock.
Rock-ish. Rock light.
I never
light
go to
rock,
concerts.
Let's talk. Anyway.
I don't like being told what to do. I'm not going to put my hands in the air.
We're practically.
Wave them like I just don't care. You're not the boss of me.
I do care.
You're not my dad.
Yes, well, you'll be glad to know. We're practically there. We're walking down the street. And some lady drives by going, the concert's been canceled. And we went, what? And it turns out the Shoreline Amphitheater, which is down in the next, right, literally next door to Google in Mountain View, is built on landfill. And it turns out the ramp that would allow them to offload their gear onto the stage had crumbled. And they couldn't get on the stage, so they canceled the concert entirely. Mm. And thank you, Live Nation. I think Lisa had to tweet at them before she could get a refund.
Man.
But as you say, horrible. We missed nothing because that would have been...
No, if you enjoy the music, I'm trying not to be a jerk anymore about music.
Wait a minute, you don't have a Matchbox 20 tribute band?
I do not have a Matchbox 20
tribute band. I'm shocked. Band. You do who? Prince?
I had a Prince band. I had a Bowie band. I currently have a Devo band.
Devo. That's a band I would go see.
And in need of a drummer, which is tough because...
Yeah.
And then I have general...
Why is it hard to get a drummer?
Well, it's hard to find drummers who... Okay, you have to have three things to find drummer. A, they have to say they're a drummer. B, they have to actually be able to keep time.
Keep time is hard.
Because a lot of people can do-do-do-do-do-do. They can do that, but they can't keep time.
You can do a paradiddle, but you got to...
And then... own drums.
Oh,
so you have to have all three, and that's, all of that. It's like the holy trinity. Yeah. And the keeping time part is extremely crucial for a Devo band.
Yeah.
Because
it's very mechanical.
It is very you're dealing with like 7/8 time, then 5/8 time, and then 3/4 time, all in the same song. So you have to be able to have. You know,
I think you need a Matchbox 20 tribute band.
No, I don't think I do. The general band, we just sort of cover everything. We have we do LCD Sound System and like 2000s. We did a 90s show.
I told him he should hire Dave Grohl, but he won't do it.
He won't call me back.
I swear to God,
he would be perfect.
He owns drums.
He knows his drums.
He probably has a drum kit.
I'm sure he has three.
His
daughter played the drums at a recent event. He brought her out. She's like 9 years old. She wailed on the drums.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Having Dave Grohl as your dad, as your drum teacher, has got to be amazing. Yeah. Just like, okay,
I think it's hard because what are you going to do? Become a drummer?
They're going to be an accountant.
You'll always get work.
She's not as good as Dave Grohl.
No, there are drummers who are in multiple bands in other cities who get paid to show up for practice. Because finding a drummer is difficult.
So I'm going to ignore the fact that you've now dissed my musical tastes and called me a nerd for liking Pokemon Go. I'm just going to ignore
that. I didn't say that. That was him.
Oh, sorry.
That was me.
I dissed your musical taste.
I didn't call you a
Greg,
nerd.
Greg, is there anything you'd like to say right now before we move on?
No.
You're not
going to
mock me
whole,
for anything?
This idea of drummers and... Why don't you just use a drum machine, for goodness sake?
No,
use automation.
They keep the rhythm perfectly.
And secondly, if you're going to produce, if you're going to be into weird music, expect to live a weird life.
He does.
I do live a weird life.
Oh, he totally lives a weird life.
No. I own drum machines. I have a couple drum machines, but it's not the same as an actual drummer.
Let's just do.
Yeah. This is why AI is not going to replace
you. I suspect a drum machine be a lot more practical right now
because it's always quantizing
stuff.
Who
would want to be a drummer?
And when it quantizes, you lose the swing of a drum. Yeah,
you can't. It's inflexible. And
and you can kind of cheat it, but
I'm not very good at this. Let's do some more.
Keeps
time. You got it.
Leo, you're hired.
Hired.
I can do this.
Let's add a little snare. Are we not Ben? We are Devo.
I'm sure they
that's
use
seven,
a drum
eight,
machine.
That's 7/8 time. No, they use a drummer.
Really?
Yeah, that's 7/8 time.
Hey, let's talk about Audible.com. I am an Audible lover. Audible is, of course, the place everybody knows, the place to get your audiobooks. I just finished the Letterman biography, which I totally enjoyed. And now I'm starting, I don't know if I'm going to recommend this, a book called Kristin Lavrans Daughter, which is from the Nobel Prize winning Sigrid Undset. It is a famous Norwegian story of thousands of pages from the Middle Ages, but she wrote it in the 20s. And I was told this is if you're into Norway, you got to read this book.
And who isn't into Norway?
And who isn't into Norway? Won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1928. Anyway, the point is classics. Modern. So how about Ready Player One? Wait a minute. We're going to get you a copy of Ready Player One because this is a great. I think Will Wheaton does the audio book. This would be great for you, Robert.
How else are you going to complain that the movie wasn't as good as the book if you don't listen to the book?
That's true. You make a good point.
Among these was my own channel, Parzival TV, broadcasting obscure, eclectic crap 24/7, 365.
Ernest Cline's latest is also Early their Armada. There actually are two versions of Ready Player One. You can get it in German, too.
Ooh.
So this is for people who want to study German, a really great way to learn here. Just a little bit
of this. How do you say the stacks in German?
Gelesen von David Nathan, ein Hörbuch des Argon Verlags.
I think he's got a great voice. I would just listen to this one.
What's David Nathan up to right now?
Jeder in meinem Alter erinnert sich daran, wo war. Und was gerade getan hat, als zum ersten Mal von
Anyway, Audible does have multilingual stuff. You can also learn a language if you wanted to learn German or French or a variety of languages. They've got the greatest language courses on here. It's all part of your Audible subscription, which makes it really amazing. Did you know that this month is the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death?
I did.
Did you really?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on around it. And my wife is a Jane Austen freak. enthusiast.
They have a ton of Jane Austen on here. I was just looking at Al Franken's newest, Giant of the Senate. Of course, he narrates
Born
that.
In that's, the house that's a great I book. Built that's myself a book. With my own two hands.
It's funny.
I'm sorry, that's not true. I got that from my official Senate website. We really should change that. Let me start over.
He says he comes from humble beginnings. He's the first person in his family to own a pasta maker.
Ooh. If you want audio books from the best readers, the best books, Kevin Hart's got a new book. Oh, I got to read that. Trevor Noah's Born a Crime is amazing. Here's what you do. You go to audible.com/twit, the number 2, and we're going to sign you up for the Gold Plus One plan. You get 2 free books and a 30-day free trial of audible.com at audible.com/twit and the number 2. It's a great way to get 2 books to try out and then 1 credit per month after that. And that is often, you know, enough. But I have to say, picking the first 2 books is going to be the biggest challenge. There's so many great books. Audible.com. One of our chatters was telling me about this, Emily. Likes A Gentleman in Moscow, a novel. She says these Immortelles books are really, really great. That's on my list. I listen to Audible like crazy. Let me see what else is on my library. Oh, I'm listening to David Sedaris' new one. He narrates that. It's his diaries, Theft by Finding. Before we travel, we always get books. I had read the Galapagos Natural History and Turn Right at Machu Picchu. I love to read these books before I go. This is a great discovery. I found this. If you love the John le Carré stuff, and I do, and I've read all the novels, I've seen all the movies, but this is BBC full cast dramatizations of the complete George Smiley books. And it is beautifully done. I'll play a little bit of this for you. It's very subtle.
The last veil was removed. George blinked and blushed and understood.
He'd imagined, so he said, fellowships and a life devoted to the literary obscurities of 17th century.
Why can't the British Siri talk like that?
I loved it. I loved it. Yes. If you are a fan of Stephen Fry and John Byrd, here's the complete BBC 4 radio comedy series called Absolute Power. Do you know this, Greg? I love Stephen Fry.
No, I haven't. This is quite old.
Media relations.
I think it's what are government media relations actually? But one makes allowances. You are, after all, a bank manager.
This is Prime Minister.
Like the BBC humor.
Yeah, it's very dry, but I love it. I love it. Here's what you do: you go to audible.com/twit, the number 2. Get 2 books to start, and then a book a month in the Audible Gold Plus One plan. Highly recommended. audible.com/twit and the number 2. This is new. A Mind at Play: How Claude Shannon Invented the Information Age. How interesting.
Ooh.
We are talking twit with 3 of the most intelligent panelists on the show, and I always love it when we can get Greg Farrow from the Packet Pushers Network on. He's a network engineer and a brilliant fella, ethereal mind on the Twitter. Roberto Baldwin, always a pleasure too. He's fun, he's smart, and he mocks my music taste. He, of course, is a regular at Engadget. And from around the world, our digital nomad.
And back again.
Gastronomad.net for Mike Elgin, back home.
Yeah.
Nice to have you. Actually, Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, has called for some government oversight on Amazon and Google and tech giants. So there is some sentiment. I just saw this on Recode. They did they're doing an episode with Corey. He says the consolidation that's happening all over this country is not a positive trend. He said that the Republicans have been really slacking in terms of asserting consumer protections.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that a number of key federal agency leaders who oversee issues of like antitrust are dangerous.
Yeah.
He really wants to kind of start paying attention to this. I worry when I hear that. On the one hand, I kind of don't disagree that, you know, you got to keep an eye on these guys. I worry at Congress's ability to regulate these guys. So.
It's problematic because the thing that makes them potentially anti-competitive are secret algorithms that nobody can see. It makes me throw up in my mouth a little bit to think about a government requiring them to reveal those. And it also makes me sick that they can get away with murder behind the scenes with these algorithms. You know, Facebook is another company that does this stuff. You don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Are they racially profiling? Are they?
And you'll never know.
Yeah. And it's all you know is that companies like Amazon and Google succeed wildly. And in the case, you know, this is more of a European antitrust obsession. But, you know, Google has competitors, and those competitors don't rank. They both, A, don't rank as well on Google searches as Google's stuff does. And B, they're not as successful. Are they not as successful because they don't rank, or do they, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know what's really going on, if right. they're really cheating or not. Right. There's just, it's so, and they, you know, these algorithm-based companies, they change their algorithms 1,000 times a day.
Right.
And so it's like, there's no
firmament. There's no, the price is
there's no tangible evidence that they're doing this because it's gone.
Right.
And even, and Amazon's already playing around with a thing called dynamic pricing where they charge you according to your ability to pay. So
that is so weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they've always monkeyed around with book prices, and, you know, who knows why or how they're doing it, what the criteria is. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, there's been automated book pricing for some time. But I think Ben Thompson over at Stratechery put it together in that the American government's going to struggle to regulate Amazon because the way that the government measures anti-competitive or monopolistic behavior is whether prices are cheaper or not. So they would – the American system says if the price of the goods rise, then that's monopolistic behavior and we will then leap in and regulate it immediately. If the price that the customer is paying is less, then that's not monopolistic behavior. Now, it doesn't matter if Amazon was able to take over 100% of the market under the current legal framework, as long as the price is – you know, this is Google's advantage, by the way, because Google has a monopoly – but it's selling something for free, so therefore it can never be a monopoly unless
this is why Google is prosecuted in the EU, but not so much here in the United States. The FTC declined
because
to prosecute.
In the EU they measure your exact behavior, not your not the outcome of the behavior.
I think it was Jeff Jarvis who told me that the difference in antitrust regulation is here they're designed to protect the consumer,
right?
And in Europe, they're designed to protect other companies, to protect competition,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a little
more
subtle and probably a better way of doing it.
Right.
Because price isn't the only way of measuring damage to consumers.
Yes.
The bizarre thing about that in Europe is that, especially as far as Google is concerned, is that Google is a monopoly in Europe and it isn't elsewhere. European citizens voluntarily choose to use Google. And it's super easy to use something else, like most other. You know, you go to Russia, and it's all Yandex. You go to the U.S., their market share, Google's market share is what, 70-something%,
60 or something. Yeah, it's lower.
Right, and so it's really a kind of bizarre thing. You know, the citizens who the government in the EU is supposed to represent have chosen to give Google monopoly power, and so I just think it's a bizarre.
That's the problem in general. We love Amazon. We love Google. We don't see the problem until it's too late that they could pose.
Yeah.
So you just Roberto, just came back from Barcelona and the Audi event there. In fact, you've got a good article in Gadget here about self-driving boredom.
Yeah.
You were looking at Audi's autonomous efforts.
So they have monotonous
efforts.
Yeah. It's the 25th hour is what they're calling it, which is somebody in the marketing team thought, hey, I got an idea. The 25th hour, because they're saying, you know,
we're
going to
get
average,
an extra hour of our day.
We're going to get an extra hour of our day. That's not how time works. It's just that you're not. But, you know, they have to, you know, companies like Audi, companies like BMW, they're both working on it. But other companies need to figure out, how are we going to sell self-driving cars?
Yeah.
Because if the car drives for you, then you're not worried about horsepower. You're not worried about torque. You're not worried about steering.
Right.
Now you're basically selling a home entertainment system
inside a
car. Yeah. How do you sell that now?
And they actually built this. This is a room where people sit, and they've got screens that show the city going by them. And they're what? They're testing. They've got a big thing on his head.
They're testing
a lot of
like what the information, is it too much? Is it not enough? What keeps you intrigued? What keeps you involved while you're driving?
And their fear is that people will become bored to tears.
Well, if you get in a car and it's just like shooting ads at you, then you're going to tell your friends, you know what? I bought this new autonomous Audi, and it sucks because I'm getting ads from from Whole Foods. I'm getting ads from Apple. It's just it's
so they're thinking about doing that. About any ads would be kind of annoying.
Yeah, so any ads would be kind of annoying. But they're trying to figure out like that secret sauce of giving you information. Like how much information do you want? Because some people want an ad. Like I've bought things from Instagram, which seems ridiculous in my mind. I'm like, ads are dumb, ads are stupid, ads pay my bills, but they're horrible.
No,
and then
I
I'm on Instagram,
Instagram,
and I'm
all the time.
Oh man, I really need
it's
those
done
stickers.
Well.
I really need
it's
those
done
coach.
Well.
I need yeah, right. And that's you know that's what we're trying to figure out. In addition to, how much information they'll tell you about your day, you know, the news. Do you want a lot of news? Do you want a little mm-hmm. news? And so just trying to figure out.
So they're not trying to make a better environment for people. They're seeing what they can get away with?
I think they've got it completely backwards. Audi wants to sell cars to consumers. And then after they bought one of these self-driving cars, they're going to get ads and they're trying to figure out what kind of ads, how many. They got it completely backwards. I think that we're going to get to a point where rides are free. And you pay for it by watching ads.
Oh, that's different.
In virtual reality, it's going to be a great virtual reality platform. Got nothing else to do. You put on the goggles, whatever it takes.
But you don't need the goggles because you have the glasses
around
you.
I mean, that's the holiday.
Because then I have to put this stuff on my face. Again, the virtual reality, like a nice warm computer on my face, does not seem like a good time.
It'll be all of the above. But especially it'll start at influencer events. So if there's a trade show, anybody with a badge will get free rides anywhere they want in the city, and they'll get peppered with advertising related to the topic of the concert.
So Roberto got put in this thing.
So I got put in it, and it was actually they were like, well, if you get, you know, motion sickness, tell us.
Oh,
and it
really?
Actually felt like you were just sitting stationary, but because of all the screens are moving,
oh, yeah.
It actually
your brain
felt like you're moving. Your brain
yeah.
see moving, so you yeah. feel like you're moving. Right. But
did
yeah,
you get sick?
No, I don't usually get
you apparently
says bucket for you there.
Yeah, you're basically inside a virtual reality bucket.
You said you started to reach for your phone.
You do because you're just like
bored.
Well, and
you
also
need a virtual
because,
phone inside the vehicle.
Yeah, and so what it comes down to is people are going to have whatever's on their phone. That's what's going to be on the screen.
That's, yeah, that's what we want.
That's what
see.
You want. You want what's on your
so
phone.
We'll,
there.
So we'll be doing Facebook.
And you'll get ads. Yeah. Maybe if you get ads, you'll probably get Facebook ads. You'll probably get Instagram ads. You'll probably get what you are used to already. Right. And you know, but Audi, you know, these companies need to do this research because they have to figure out what people are going to want before they want.
I'm afraid, you know, I
and
hate to tell
there
them.
There was nothing what in there about them giving people ads. They were using ads as bad. Ads are bad.
Thought.
That was sort of their
have
idea.
Windows. You can look out the windows as the world goes by. And if you want to look at your phone, look at the phone.
Microsoft Windows?
No, people don't want that. No one looks out the window anymore. I'm driving. There's people in the car. I'm like, look, a deer. And they're like, wait, what? Well, you missed the deer. That's me driving it all day.
You sound like a dad.
Why does Audi think you need something on the screen?
It's not that Audi
because
thinks it's that we think
value.
It because you know
you
why? Because when yeah. you when we finish this, you're going to pick up your phone and do this.
The horrible reality is that
my mind.
Audi is not going to survive this transition. They're like, we don't need Audis anymore. You know, self-driving cars are going to be generic.
So, Greg, you're saying they have to add value.
Yeah, there has to be a point of differentiation. If you go and have any Uber car and it's a black something, or maybe it's something that Uber manufactures itself.
So
and
now Audi differentiates itself with the pleasure of driving is one way car companies do it, right?
Yeah.
But you won't be doing that.
Well, there's going to be the niche market of drivers. Most people don't really like driving.
We can't
all
let
they
people
do,
drive if it's autonomous because
it's
they'll screw it up.
It's too dangerous.
They'll
That's
screw
exactly
up.
Right.
We can't let people drive. They'll have to go to special places.
Yeah.
Right?
Imagine what's going to happen to vintage cars.
Well, everyone's going to bully the self-driving cars because a self-driving car will get out of your way. If I'm driving, let's say this is...
That's true.
And you're here's
a
self-driving car. I know the self-driving car is going to stop if I cut it off.
Right. So you just cut it off.
So,
and that's the Apple self-driving car.
This is the Apple self-driving car.
You know, somebody did that to me yesterday. I'm driving my Tesla.
Yeah.
And they were driving a truck with a horse trailer on it. And they decided they didn't want to be in that lane. They just pulled in front of me. They figured, oh, he'll stop.
Right. The Tesla
will
take...
Tesla will stop. I'm pretty sure that's what they because it was the weirdest behavior.
Oh, they might not
like,
have seen you.
No. I was Maybe. They pulled and they almost hit me. And I really thought, oh, that's because
you know why? Because in that truck were the best self driving vehicles horses.
Yeah. What do you do? So when somebody's riding a horse, what screens do you show him?
Yeah.
Or her. I don't know.
I think what you're seeing here is economically, there's a massive gap opening up between who's going to manufacture electric cars, who's going to manufacture self-driving cars, and if you have self-driving cars, are they all going to be run by ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft and so on and so forth?
Yeah, what do you need car ownership for at that point?
Yeah.
Well, I personally don't own a car now. And I would welcome a ride-sharing service that could just come and pick me up from my door so I don't have to call a taxi and wait for it to arrive or go and catch the bus. I think that's a great thing. But if you're a car manufacturer and you're in a business where you're making $5 to $10 billion a year shipping cars,
I know.
You want to be able to have a spectrum of choices. So you have companies like Audi and Chrysler and Ford investing in ride-hailing services, and at the same time they're putting out cars that consumers might want to buy directly. So self-driving cars, but ones that consumers might want to pay a premium for. And I think they're going to try all the different possibilities in the market, and we don't know what the final... It's a bit like Google Glasses, right? Google Glasses 2 comes out. Is it going to be a success or a failure? We don't know. You know, I can point at things like the infrastructure isn't there.
You just have to try it, yeah.
You know, and they do all of them.
Right.
Big companies aren't smart enough to do the one thing that's right. They do all the things and wait to see which one of them, one of those little treasurous little nuggets of happiness floats to the top and keeps them winning.
So I think we already kind of have an experience, anybody who lives in an urban area, of what it would be like not to own a car, because Uber is cheaper, faster, and easier, isn't it? You know, we drove into San Francisco. It was easier to park.
But here's an
and just take Uber.
The problem with Ubers is the driver. People feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
with
I don't want a human in there.
That's why self-driving
cars
and Uber makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The issue with self-driving cars still is that it's not removing that extra car on the road, because people are still getting in one person in one car and they're going from point A to point B.
More than 500 Ubers on the road in San Francisco. It hasn't reduced congestion. It's increased congestion.
And so there's still
because they're always driving.
And so everyone's talking about self-driving cars. Right. I'm like, well, we still have to look at the infrastructure of public transportation, which is, you know what, you can get a lot of people on a bus. And if the bus is self-driving, that's great, because the bus is – and this is what's going to – this is the first version of autonomy, is going to be vehicles along a very narrow route. They're on a route – they're like slot cars basically. And they're on this route, and it's going to be – probably Ubers, most likely, and probably public transportation. But the like, oh, it's all just keep buying cars, or we're just going to have a lot of cars. If you just replace the cars that people are driving with cars that no one is driving, we're still going to have congestion. You know, algorithms are great, and we're going to be able to move a little bit quicker. But it still needs to be a reduction in vehicles on the road.
Right. So the way that's going to work is you're going to see in the capital cities like London and New York with the congestion zones where – unless you're registered or have a permit to drive in the center of those cities, the obvious thing that they're going to do is to say only self-driving cars from ride-hailing services inside of that congestion zone, and that'll prove it out. And then you'll see they're already talking here in London about turning parking garages into charging stations for these self-driving vehicles. And
but they're still giving up all that real estate to vehicles.
the research shows that it's an 8-to No, you're wrong. There's an 8-to-1 compression ratio. Once you shift to self-driving ride-hailing services, for every 8 cars on the road today will be replaced by 1 self-driving car.
But you're talking about decades into the future.
2 decades.
No,
probably more
talking,
like 3. If you're talking about everyone having it, we're probably 15 years out before we even get the crappy ones.
My
on the
Prius
road.
Will still work then.
In the congestion zones inside the cities, we have the pollution problem. They have the health, too much diesel, too much whatever. It's probably going to happen within 5 years. There's a tipping point
there won't be appropriate self-driving vehicles in 5 years to really...
You're not going to have self-driving vehicles in Ohio, right? It's going to be in the capital cities where there's high density and there are more complex issues than there are in somewhere else, right?
No,
you're
I
going
agree.
To see those.
You'll see them in Singapore, in Hong Kong, in London.
No, I mean, it makes more sense
Beijing,
for self-driving vehicles.
Beijing, pollution is a massive problem.
Yeah.
And although, you know what, legislate, say,
you still see a ton of bicycles in Beijing. I think bicycles might be a better choice for a lot of these urban areas. Yeah. Get some exercise, no
or
pollution.
The bus.
Or you could walk. Or,
or take
the
subway.
Yeah.
Or take a Segway. Anyway, so before we move on, we're talking about Audi. I really think Apple has the right idea for the future of manufacturing self-driving cars. They're working with an Austrian contract manufacturer called Magna Steyr. Right. And they've based their whole business off of Foxconn. And so right. I think Apple is making a big bet that
we won't make them.
They'll we'll just, have else it won't matter them. Who makes them. They'll be designed in California or whatever.
Right.
And then some contract manufacturer will make them. They'll be given the brand of whoever designed them. And they'll churn them out like nothing. They'll cost very little. And they'll be mostly consumer electronics experiences.
But how would the cost of having a third party build it be different from having, you know, Ford build it?
Because, well, talk about Ford, Audi, whatever. I mean, to a certain extent, car manufacturing has become very contract manufacturer-like. The parts are all manufactured.
What you're saying is it's going to be commoditized.
It'll be commoditized, right. You won't get an Audi.
Who cares about an Audi?
Exactly.
Right? The brand's not going to mean anything.
I mean, look what happened with Apple, with the iPhone. They came out with the iPhone. They mass-produced these things.
I bet you can't tell me what the number one buggy whip manufacturer was in 1892.
Buggies Unlimited.
He's better than I thought. Yeah. Better than I thought.
Yeah, no, I just agree with the economics. Limited. Everything about the electric car industry is accelerated economics. It all runs off a cliff. Yeah. Like, I was talking to somebody in the fuel, in the petrol industry, petrol stations, and they are predicting that if just 30% of sales of petrol, if petrol sales shrink by 30%, the entire distribution market for fuel collapses because it needs a certain density, it needs a certain number of fuel stations, and if 30% of the fuel stations go away because 30% less petrol is being sold, that whole distribution chain just falls apart and that market goes into freefall. And at that point, it becomes more effective to have electric cars because fuel has to rise in price just because of the cost of distribution.
That's fuel in general, all kinds of fuels, right? I mean, we're starting to see a transition. People are worried about climate change. It may turn out that we go to renewables faster than we thought. But that cliff.
There's a singularity where solar is always cheaper than alternative sources.
And we're approaching
in which case, why would you do anything else?
Right. We're approaching
and with batteries, the storage technology is just really driving that. As soon as you're able to store that with the Powerwall, with Mercedes is making something as well. The storage, once you can store that energy and use it anytime, and then suddenly you're like, now solar power you don't have an argument against really solar power. And that's what Hawaii is moving to, because they don't really have a choice, because their pricing, your electric, your kilowatt per hour rises and falls based on what the oil prices are, because they're all using diesel.
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. And so very tightly.
And the mother of all venture capitalists is, of course, strongly backing solar, the Pentagon, of course. They go to these sunny places, and they have to have these convoys going through Afghanistan and elsewhere, protecting these giant oil tankers, because the tanks and the cars and all the stuff that you need for a presence like what Pentagon has, what the U.S. military has in Afghanistan, is just you need like trillions of gallons of gas. And the sun is beating down every day on everything, and you know it's free energy.
What about the chat rooms bringing out these disruptions cause disruptions in tax revenue? How do local, when you lose gasoline, you lose gas taxes. How do we just solve that by writing new laws, or how sticky is that thick wicket? I said that for Greg. So
you're probably the only one who knows what a wicket is.
There's a whole bunch of things that has to happen, but if you look at what they do here in the UK, they charge you road tax, and which is to own a car, you have to have a tax to put it on the road, as well as your insurance, plus the government licensing fees, plus so forth and so on. Most of the government revenue, though, for running the roads comes in the form of fuel, so the taxes on the fuel here,
that's
which
the
are very
same here
high.
In the US, actually.
So if you're not, you still need the roads, and building out that infrastructure is not cheap. So what do? Tax electricity? That'll be popular.
That's what we do here.
So it'll be an interesting challenge, but that's all. Everything we talk about is a disruption and proposes challenges for all the existing
Well, what happens to all the garages and mechanics? Keep in mind that an electric car needs – what is it, one-fifth the servicing of an ordinary car?
You don't have to change the oil. You don't have to worry about
it. It's funny. I bought a Tesla a year ago, and am I supposed to bring it in? I don't know.
You don't even have to change the batteries as much.
It's never once been in. No, it's
not the batteries, the brakes.
The brakes.
Because of regenerative.
Regeneration,
Your brakes don't go out as often. So you're changing the wheel, and most of the batteries are rated at over 300,000 miles at
You're
this
mostly
point.
Going to be upgrading the processor. in, you know, for the
Well,
for
I get
the
updates
VR.
All the time, yeah. But yeah, hardware upgrades. Right. Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Well, I guess we got to, I don't know, realign your wheels again.
Let's take a little break. we're almost done here. We've been talking for 2 hours here. We might want to wrap this up. But first, let's it's hard to stop when we're having fun like this. But let's first take a look at some of the things that happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Took a picture of you. It says 54-year-old man wearing a hat looking happy.
I took 6 years off my age because I was wearing the hat sideways.
Yes.
Tech news today.
Axios says Google, Apple, and Amazon have spent record amounts in lobbying this year.
I think because there's so much uncertainty, I am guessing these companies feel like they have to protect themselves by getting as much opinion out there and as many people work in the system as possible.
Well, CR1 in the chat room says, why lobby by politicians direct from Amazon?
They sell everything.
Echo?
All about Android.
Did you guys hear yesterday was World Emoji Day? Very big deal. Also, we were reminded yesterday of a very sad fact. Once Android O comes to fruition, we'll be saying goodbye to those beautiful yellow blobs. Well, now we're getting these circular guys that look like everybody else's. So there goes our individualism. But I'm not bitter. I guess we'll be okay with it.
Twit, the happiest place on earth.
The sweat face emoji is going to completely change with the new emoji in Android O. Yeah. It's going to mean sickly, oh, wow. As I typically use it for being anxious or nervous, which is pretty much every minute of my life.
Especially when Jason's not here.
Florence, the great Florence Ion. A lot of fun on this week in, I'm sorry, All About Android, not this week in Android. Megan Maroney, we have a big week ahead. What's on the docket?
White and black hat hackers will descend on steamy, hot Las Vegas this week for Black Hat. The conference started in 1997, which means it turns 20 years old. And my advice for you is to watch out for pineapples. And I'm not talking about their prickly skin. If constantly protecting yourself from getting hacked isn't your jam, you might be more interested in the Wearable Technologies Conference, which will happen this week in San Francisco. And finally, Amazon, Facebook, PayPal, and AMD will all release earnings this week. Alphabet will release their quarterly earnings as well. And because of changes in regulation, we expect them to break out YouTube earnings separately from Google search and advertising. That happens for the first time, and that could be interesting. That is a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join Jason Howell and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on twit.tv.
I have a feeling the wearables conference won't be quite as big this year. I don't know. Is that a category anymore? Is that funny how these things kind of...
I've never been a fan of wearables.
But you put them on, you're like, all right, this is cool. Jaw.
Yeah. And then like after 2 weeks, I take it off and I put it over here. And then...
It's on your dresser.
It's over here for the next 2 years, and I'm like, oh, this thing.
Yeah.
I just, I could never, I tried to be excited about
it. It was a category people were excited about.
Oh, yeah. Intel, like, put through some money at it.
And by the way, they've just closed that division down. Yeah, the basis is gone.
Is it me, or is that what Intel does? They have this huge initiative. They talk about it. You read a bunch of stuff, and they're like, oh, we're closing it down. It's like, again?
Yeah, Intel.
No, that's everything that Intel.
Intel's technology really wasn't as good as anybody else's. Their mobile strategy hadn't supported the technology,
right.
So they didn't shut it down. I'm pretty sure that Intel, like every other big company, goes and sticks its finger in someone else's pie, and if it doesn't work, it pulls its finger back out again. But Intel's mobile strategy hasn't been very good. Its low power stuff is still struggling. Even their intelligence and image recognition chips are still not as good as somebody else's. So it's hard to see how Intel comes back and participates in the mobile or the wearers market offering silicon. And ultimately, its business is selling silicon, right? So that's what it does.
Well, thank God the PC market is really on the go. Never mind.
It fell 10% again this quarter, didn't it?
Yeah, another 10% down. Microsoft's making money, but it's all in the cloud. And actually, Microsoft's quarterly results came out this week, and for the first time ever, they made more money on Office subscriptions than they did on selling Office software outright. And that's definitely a bellwether for the future of software. In fact, who even remembers going to a software store and buying a box of software and taking it home? It seems so primitive now.
I did it, but I don't remember.
Yeah. I remember buying Windows XP because my wife took a math class that she needed.
You had
Windows.
To have XP.
I had to have XP, so I bought Windows XP so we could boot camp it up.
The last time I tried to buy Microsoft Office about 4 or 5 years ago, and the sticker shock, I went into a Staples. It was like $700 or something, and I thought, I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
I'm just not I can live without Office. I'm not buying it. I'll use last year's Office.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. Now I do subscribe for $8 a month to Office 365. And it's a better deal. I subscribe to Photoshop and Lightroom, and it's just a natural way to do it. Yeah. Let's take a little break. We have a few more minutes with our great guests, our panel today, Mike Elgin. And don't forget gastronomad.net if you're interested in spending some time with Mike and Amira in Barcelona.
Barcelona, we're going to teach people how to live everywhere and eat everything.
Sounds wonderful. Roberto Baldwin here from Engadget. And is your band performing anywhere soon, or are you waiting for that drummer?
We are waiting for a drummer from one band. The other band is gearing up for a big wedding.
Can't you have that drummer drum at the other band?
I already asked them. I have two drummers in the main band.
You do.
And I asked them,
duty.
And I said, hey, do you want to
you have two. You have an excess of drummers.
Aren't you a drummer?
Yeah, but not good enough for that.
Okay. He's got to be the front man. He's the front man. He's
but I'm front. No, I'm not. I'm just not good enough.
Did you see Kid Rock might be running for Congress?
Yeah, I saw that.
Finally, somebody responsible.
You don't have a Kid Rock tribute band, do you?
No, okay. I have the furthest thing from a Kid Rock tribute band.
Senator Kid Rock.
Well, initially, like when you went to Kid Rock's running, like you went, the URL hit like Warner Brothers, Kid Rock. I'm like, oh,
right.
This is just a
it was just a PR thing.
Well, that, I mean, that's how our current president ended up.
With yeah.
It was a PR
sometimes
thing.
Sometimes you're just going to do it for just PR. Like,
just
and
go
then,
for it.
Wow, you won. So,
oh, dear.
Cool.
Now what?
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. You know, you've got to do finances. It's a grown-up thing. You got to save for the future, for your college, you know, your kids' college bills, or you want to buy that house, or hey, someday you're going to retire. Betterment is designed to help improve your long-term returns and lower your taxes for everything from retirement planning to building wealth, all the financial goals. They use very advanced, sophisticated investment strategies and, of course, the latest technology. 250,000 people use Betterment to get better advice. Based on the information you share with Betterment, they'll make tailored recommendations. How much to invest? Yes, they'll even tell you how much risk to take, the type of investment account you should have. And on average, this is important, Betterment's tax-coordinated portfolio can increase portfolio value by as much as 15%. 15% over 30 years. Betterment gives you a clear view of your net worth when you sync your outside accounts. Another reason to choose Betterment, low transparent advisory fees, much lower than traditional services, only 0.25% on assets under management. And if you'd like to get access to a certified financial planner or a licensed financial expert, you pay a little more, but just 0.4 to 0.5%. It really is a great deal. Betterment, they care about you keeping your money and your data secure. That's why they have advanced data encryption and login protection, and they care about growing your money. Investing involves risk, but for a limited time, you can get up to a year managed free at betterment.com/twit. Betterment.com/twit. Rethink what your money can do. Betterment is a better way. Kid Rock, Senator Rock. Are you going to call him Senator Rock?
I'm not going to call
Senator
him any.
Kid.
I don't
Senator
live in Michigan.
Kid. Yeah, well, that's right. It's
the other Rock.
The other
what
Rock.
What do you go by? His
real name,
name
is what? Richie.
Richie
Rock.
Richie Rock.
Richie Rock.
Richie something.
That's
really
your name.
Yeah, Kid Rock for Senate. Let's see what it looks like right now. Are you scared? Yeah. At this point, pimp of the nation. At this point, it does look promotional. But as you say. You never know.
And also, kids, those of you beginning musical careers out there, don't have your name be Kid, because eventually you'll be in your 60s.
Not a kid.
Yeah, Sonic Youth is not really.
He's not a
kid. When they broke up, they were definitely not youths.
Sonic Youth.
So quick thing, Leo, and I just want to throw this in there because I think it's such a cool thing. Before the show began, before we began recording, we were talking about command lines and that sort of thing. And I mentioned that my son uses a thing for the Mac OS that gives you super powerful thing. It's called Alfred.
Oh, I love Alfred.
Alfred.
I know Alfred. I've known Alfred for a long time. Alfred's a good friend of mine at alfredapp.com. Yeah, if you like the command line. What Alfred is kind of like Launch Bar was the original one, and you can now do it with just built-in Apple stuff, Sherlock and so forth. But Alfred is really great if you use a command line, because you can do those command line chores from your command space, your hotkeys. No, I love Alfred. In fact, I'm a Power Pack owner on Alfred. So, yes, thank you for that. I had asked Mike.
Yeah, I use Launch Bar.
Launch Bar is still around?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Launch Bar is...
That was the original app that got Sherlocked. No?
I'm not too sure. I mean, it's gone on to do some really amazing things for me and some of the automations that I can trigger with it.
Yeah, he still makes it. That's nice.
You might be thinking of Quicksilver, Leo.
No, I know about Quicksilver, and I know that went away. But no, Launch Bar, I for some reason thought it had just been superseded by, you know... Objective development. No. Yeah, that's a good... No, I love Launch Bar. Another good choice. Yep. Very similar to Alfred and Quicksilver.
Yes. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Quicksilver went open source, and you could still use Quicksilver. I don't know the state of development.
I had problems with it.
Did you?
Found it to be too stable.
I don't know how this turned into Mac Break Weekly, but it did somehow.
Leo, I've got one thing I'd like to raise.
Yes.
When I was at the IETF last week, there's a working group draft... this is part of the IETF is that they're responsible for the encryption algorithms and the SSL. So, that, you know, that little lock that appears in your web browser and the encryption algorithms and the protocols that go with that. There's a new draft coming out around TLS 1.3. Now, TLS 1.3 is about making sure that operators can't intercept your traffic as it crosses their networks then sell your data for money. And I dropped a note in here. I found the link. This is from Ad Age, is the website, back in 2015, talking about this being a $24 billion market for selling your private data as it crosses the network backbones. And so the IETF has been putting together a working group on increasing encryption on the carriers, and they wanted to get more people to jump in and join the conversation. Now, I'm not so sure how many telco nerds or carrier nerds or crypto nerds are out there, but if you are... It would be really great if you could go along and participate in the draft that's happening around this, which is the effect of pervasive encryption on operators. I'll drop it into the chat room.
We had Vint Cerf on Triangulation, one of the fathers of the internet. I once asked him, if you were going to do it all over again, designing TCP/IP and the internet, what would you do differently? And he said pervasive encryption. They really didn't think that would be necessary, and now, of course, it's obvious that it would be.
There's been some real argy-bargy going on here. Apparently, some of the big carriers,
they don't want this at all, right?
Yeah. No, they're really opposed to it, very strongly opposed. Yeah. And there's a lot of very unusual stuff happening here where the carriers are putting pressure on the companies that employ the people who are doing this draft in the IETF. And so this is big company on big company saying, you know, we're your customer here. You really should get your person on the IETF to drop this because we are opposed to it.
It's interesting because you would think Google would be opposed to it, but I think that their engineering heritage.
Google's not opposed because they capture it all in the browser. They get all
they
the
get it anyway.
They get it from Chrome directly.
You signed in.
What we're trying to stop here is when we use TLS 1.2, which is reasonably modern, there's still a lot of data leakage in the header. Like a lot of the HTTP requests and the URL is not hidden.
So that's interesting because I just assumed, in the United States, the law that protected you from your internet service provider snooping on you was allowed to lapse. The regulation was overturned at the FCC by the new administration. And I just assumed that, the good news is my Google searches at least are not visible to my ISP, but that's not always true.
No, some of it is and some of it isn't. So it's not as simple to say. Okay,
that's good to know. Some of the metadata and so forth is.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of the URL is still shown and the header is not fully encrypted. So the next generation of TLS 1.3 will make pervasive encryption.
So this is actually kind of a nice example of how when government fails – to protect your privacy, technology can step in and do that.
It is, except it literally comes down to the shoulders of about five people.
Yeah.
Who are working in the working group and are being...
if they all die mysteriously in the next 6 weeks, then we'll know.
Yeah.
Well, these people are actually having their threatened to have their jobs taken away from them and stuff like
that's
this.
That's terrible.
Which is really not cool.
Yeah.
And this is all volunteer work. Although some of it's funded by companies who make it possible for these people to volunteer and so forth. So
who are the big adversaries to this? People like Verizon or?
Yes, Verizon, AT&T, various governments. They want to be able to monitor the data.
Yeah.
Like Chinese government, perhaps. The Russians don't want to see pervasive encryption.
Yeah. If they vanish, I'd look at the Russians.
What about, there's also a lot of companies who specialize in tapping this data and collecting it and analyzing it. So Cambridge Analytics, for example, which was recently was part of the furore in the government and so forth.
Right.
You know, if we start taking away their data sources, they get a little bit poopy. So, you know, these fights still go on.
Yeah. And what's also said is that, well, the engineers at the IATF understand the stakes and the relevant details. I think end users.
Well, this is a real
end users.
It's really something that happens in the back room.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
You know, this happens, and when it comes out, everybody's going to go, "Oh, isn't that what you always did?" And the answer is no. Yeah. Your data is not. Data in motion is not safe.
And that's exactly why VinSurf wanted it built baked into the internet from the beginning, because it's not even a question. That's just how the internet would have worked.
Well, we couldn't do it 30 years ago. We just didn't have enough CPU.
Right.
To run the
internet was built by a bunch of hippies who thought that everybody would just be
I think it's
nice
more of that, actually.
Everyone's going to be cool, right?
It'll be cool.
No, it was far simpler. It was like, we could barely make this work. How the hell would we add encryption to it, right? And it really wasn't. It was like, they didn't think about encryption because they literally stumbled from problem to problem to problem right through the boot cycle. And no, it wasn't anything as glorious as hippies striving for freedom. That was completely irrelevant. Yeah.
Greg, always a pleasure having you on. Thank you for staying up a little late with us. You can now head over to the local and have another one of them pints that you seem to like so much. You'll find Greg at packetpushers.net. That's his great network with lots of really good podcasts. He's on the internet at Ethereal Mind, both as the website and as his Twitter handle. And thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Yeah. What a privilege.
Yeah. Roberto Baldwin, he came all the way from Prague. Greg.
That wasn't me.
Yeah. He came all the way from his Devo cover band just to be with us tonight.
All the way from Akron, Ohio. It. That's how dedicated we are.
Is that where you're from, Akron?
No, that's where Devo's from.
Oh, but Devo is. That's
I'm from California.
Yeah. You're a hippie.
I'm a hippie.
Yeah, clearly.
We're all hippies.
Appreciate it.
You don't have a choice. It's in the water.
Thank you, Roberto. Catch his work at Engadget.com, of course. How's it been, by the way, the new ownership and
you know what?
Does that change anything? You're owned by Verizon now.
We're owned by Verizon. You know what? I don't.
Can you write bad stuff about Verizon?
Oh, I write bad stuff about Verizon all the time. Good. When Verizon bought AOL, there were a few sites that wrote, how can we trust TechCrunch and Engadget to? I'm just like, because you're not just when you write that sort of crap, you're not attacking a publication. You're attacking individual reporters. You're saying that these reporters don't have the journalistic integrity.
That's right.
To see that Verizon is a crappy company,
right?
And it is. I work for a horrible company.
They just got busted gating bandwidth to Netflix.
No, and so I talk crap about Verizon as much as I possibly can.
Good.
And if they fire me, I don't, whatever.
No, that's right. Your integrity is more valuable than your job.
But for the most part, they don't. They have zero. They've had zero input on anything we do. No one's ever said anything.
That.
No one's ever come.
TechCrunch and Engadget don't seem in any way,
No one's gutted. Ever said anything to me, to anyone on the staff. Good. That's awesome. I think they know better, especially in the world of Twitter, because
everybody would know.
You shut somebody up on
secrets.
Then they just jump on Twitter, and now you have every tech reporter, every reporter in the world being like, look what you did.
Yeah.
Verizon, can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now? And Mike Elgin, where will we? Computer World, of course.
Computer World, best company.
I follow you on Facebook and Google Plus. It seems like you're on Facebook a lot.
Yeah, occasionally. Mostly Google Plus and Twitter these days, a little bit of Instagram. And Fast Company, Computer World. I just finished the second to the last chapter of the book, Gastronomad.
Writing a book?
Yes. And that's going
to
be...
Oh, I can't wait to read it.
I can't wait for you to read it. It's
awesome.
It's a lot of fun to write and should be out soon.
This is a lifestyle. If we could just get internet... Fast internet everywhere. I would just pack up the podcast gear and hit the road.
Imagine if you
There's no reason
put the entire company into a self-driving car.
Yeah.
You could go anywhere.
Or an
airstream. You could record your podcast with Audi's new podcast version of the A8.
Is there? The new A8 Podcasters Edition?
In 15 years.
They'll sell a lot of those.
That's what it's going to be. Boy. You're going to buy cars that are versions. Like, you're going to get the businessman version. You're going to get the social media butterfly version. You're going to get the...
I do want that.
You're going to get the I Love Kid Rock version. You're going to get the Devo version.
For what it's worth, Leah, that's what we do at the Packet Pushers. We go to the events like the IETF and record 8 to 10 podcasts with the people inside these organizations.
No, I know you do, and it's awesome. Mm. Yeah.
And
I hate that. Really, that's not the road I'm talking about. I want to get in a boat, frankly. Yeah, I want to be in a catamaran in the middle of the ocean and podcast.
Well, we pull
when is that going to happen, Greg? When are we going to have high-speed internet globally, worldwide?
Well, at the moment, it's hard to see that that would ever happen. There's not enough spectrum, and it's all about latency. You can't change the speed of light. So,
what about those Project Loon and the balloons that Google was talking about? Or Aquila, the killer drone that Facebook was going to do? Any of that going to happen?
I don't think so. I think it's a little hard to tell at the moment. Like, it's possible that they are, but I think there's software that coordinates where the balloons are. And then the question is, where's your antenna pointing to?
Yeah.
Is it here? Is it there?
Well, on a boat, it's here and there.
I was going to say that my tombstone. Right. I was going to move, but I was waiting for better internet.
You just need a big fiber optic cable on a big spool. Yeah. And just
We're roll stuck it in out. Petaluma, yes, I think.
Roll it back in as you go back to shore.
There are worse places to be stuck, frankly.
No, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. Hey, thank you all for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC in the evening if you're in the U.K. That's why I thanked Greg for staying up late. But I hope you will join us. If you join us live, don't forget to go to the chat room and pipe up in there at irc.twit.tv. You can also join us live. We have some great visitors from Oakland, from Germany, from London, England, and Columbus, Ohio. Thank you for visiting. From all over the world, people come to see us. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put out a chair for you, make sure you're comfortable, offer you snacks. If you can't be here in person, if you can't be here during the live stream, you can always download on-demand versions of all of our shows, audio and video. The website is twit.tv for this show. I think it's twit.tv/thisweekintech, something like that. It's a longer URL. You'll find it. Just go to the front page and click shows. You can also, of course, subscribe. However, whatever podcast program you use, just look for Twit and subscribe. That way you'll get every episode every week. And you can start your week right with a little dose of tech talk. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Yay. Golf clap.
Doing the Twit.